Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down in time. Road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always
saying what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets you tough, just remember. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll take you one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
On keeping on, and we're going to do just that. Let me tell you, we're in the fight of our lives right now. We really are. Our country's turned in a different direction that we really don't want to go in. And guess what? We're going to keep on keeping on until we get it back. We started in a pretty bad place in this country, actually. We came over here, the founding fathers came over here because of a lack of freedom of religion. Let me tell you, we're going to keep on keeping on. This is Contending for Truth Radio. This is the Parental Sovereignty Show, and we are going to have a great show tonight. You know, each week, I'm always proud of where we end up, because I'm a firm believer in going back to basics, and every discussion we've had, we go back to basics. And if when we go back to the basics, we solve a whole lot of problems. You know, our parental rights are being totally stepped on and have been for a long, long time. The left has been infiltrating our schools with teachers that are willing to teach a leftist ideology, to teach a leftist worldview for a long time. And sometimes they get away with it, sometimes they don't. We're going to talk a little bit about Jared Markham tonight in West Virginia, in Logan, West Virginia. You know, that's a situation that's not a Common Core situation. That's a teacher who got out of line, a teacher who does not believe, obviously, in First Amendment freedom of speech rights or Second Amendment rights to own a gun. But ladies and gentlemen, what's coming down the pike is Common Core. And let me tell you, that is where they try and institutionalize this chaos. That's where they try and systematize this chaos. And it's crazy. And we're going to keep on keeping on. We got some great people on tonight. You know, Jennifer and Stacy are already here, our co-hosts. And I want to welcome our newest co-host, Dan Wilson from Florida. He lives down there near Tampa and St. Petersburg in Newport Richey, Florida. I worked in Newport Richey when I lived down there. I lived in St. Petersburg, so I know exactly where he's at. Love that part of the country. And in a couple of minutes, we'll bring Dan on and welcome him as our new co-host each week. It kind of spreads it out a little bit. Now Jennifer and Stacy don't have me overcome by the women. I got some help on the boys' side on this side. He's got some great things to say. He's a great patriot. He works hard. He's in the trenches doing the things that he can do. And so is Stacy. So is Jennifer. So am I. We come together from across, from across the nation as patriots who fight daily, fight this nonsense. There's a lot of nonsense out there. We also are going to have a call in. Rodney Stanhope, who was on there with us last week, had so much fun. He's going to call in this week. Rodney's another great patriot. Let me tell you, I often say to my friends back east, because over the last 2 years in becoming a political activist, you know, Herman Cain, I logged onto his website, ended up in Teen Cain, and somehow, some way, two and a half years later, I ended up a political activist. And it feels kind of lonely out here in California sometimes. Most everything that goes on seems to go on back east. CPAC goes on back east and different things. I know Alabama is getting ready to have some stuff, more stuff going on. There's all kinds of stuff back there. And I always say, all my friends back east have all the fun, and all I get is this old blog talk radio show. But tonight, one of my friends from California is going to be calling in, Rodney Stanhope. Rodney's a great patriot. Let me tell you, there's nobody that I know in California that's any better connected to California politics than Rodney Stanhope. And he's gone up and down the country. He's ran for the vice chairman of the California GOP. He knows a lot of people. He knows what's going on in California politics. And he's a lot like me. He knows we've got to go back to basics. Got to go back to the basics. You know, Ronald Reagan went back to the basics. And he changed this country for a couple of decades. And we need another Reagan. We're going to have a hard time finding one. And it's not that Ronald Reagan was super, super special. He was just a human being just like you and I. He had his flaws. But let me tell you, he got the country back to basics. He got the country back to understanding that big government just cannot micromanage. That smaller local or state government is a lot more effective. You have less waste, fraud, and abuse. He had some basic ideals about being good to people and about freedoms and the Constitution and the flag. He was a great patriot. Rodney Stanhope knows that we've got to get back to those ideals. We're going to have a great show tonight, folks. And one of the reasons we're going to have a great show tonight is because we're going to have great roundtable discussion. If you're just joining us on Contending for Truth Radio for the Parental Sovereignty Show for the first time, what you're going to find us do is we're going to find us discussing the topics, discussing the issues in a roundtable format. I got a good friend down in Texas, Michael Smith. Michael started into Blog Talk about the same time I do. He's taken Blog Talk up to a higher level, the Conservative Nation Radio, and they do a different style, different format. They're more like the big guys. I always like to describe what we do here on Contending for Truth Radio as sitting around in our living room discussing politics, and you get to listen in. If you're listening to the show and you have something that you want to say, we want to welcome you to call in. If you call in at 347-205-9620, that's 347-205-9620. We'll bring you on and let you enjoy the conversation with us. We want to tell you a couple of things about some of the other shows going on. Next week, we've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks, but we're going to bring back politics and religion. Don't tell me I can't mix them. We're going to have a very special guest. You know, I've met a lot of people along this road, and John Stevens is one of them, and he's written a very, very special book called The Sissification of America. And we're going to have a great discussion with him next Monday. Of course, this Thursday, here on the Continuing for Truth Radio Network, Free Don Miller. If you don't know anything about Don Miller, then we surely, surely want you to go to anatomyofawrongfulconviction.com and look up his story. It will enrage you entirely. This is a case of a man who has been sitting in prison for 15 years now for a crime that wasn't committed. Was never committed. The proof is there. We're dealing with a sheriff that stole $40,000 from the city of Hurley, and then when he got caught, he said, "Oh, I didn't know it was against the law." Now, is that insanity, folks, or what? We're dealing with a judge who has a real hard time with sexual sin, but doesn't even do anything about it. He has a real hard time with lying. He has a real hard time with court manipulation. He has a real hard time with cover-up. You know, he's got also a real hard time with asking Scott Osborne out in California to throw away my First Amendment rights because he doesn't like our internet activity. Well, Judge Madden, guess what? You know, you did that, and now you got three Don Miller shows. You got Orion Talk Radio Network with Bob Green and Steve Williams doing News Stalker each night, and on Thursday night they especially covered the Free Don Miller Show after we do 5 o'clock. PM California time, at 7 o'clock California time, they start in on it. And then on Wednesday night, back on the Underground Hard Drive, we've got another Free Don Miller radio show. So take that, Judge Madden, and your internet activity. And then on Fridays, every Friday morning, 10:30, we sit around Betty's table, and we talk about the Old Testament. And I teach ladies Bible class, and we're walking our way through the Old Testament. We just got done with Moses on the top of Mount Sinai, bringing down the Ten Commandments and the rest of the law. And if you want to go to Continuing for Truth Radio at Blog Talk Radio, just go to Blog Talk Radio, look up Continuing for Truth Radio, listen to last week's show. If you want to talk about a rant, I got on a rant. Let me tell you, and we have a great time. So that's some of the stuff that goes on Continuing for Truth Radio here on Blog Talk. And with no further ado, I am going to start bringing in our co-hosts. And the first co-host I'm going to introduce tonight is Dan Wilson from Florida. And Dan, we want a big, huge welcome to you. It is so exciting to have you. You know, it sometimes when one of us is missing, like last week we were missing Stacy, comes down to just me and Jennifer going back and forth. You know, you get kind of bored with two people. We didn't have to worry about it too much because we had Ken Crow, the Tea Party. I'm going to do it again. The Tea Party community call in with some great discussion. We had Rodney Stanhope, and we had you. And during the week, you reached out and said, "Yeah, you know what? I'd like to be a part of this each week." And let me tell you, I'm really excited about it, Dan. I want to welcome you and hand it over to you for any opening remarks you've got. I'm going to let you hand it off to Jennifer Montrose in Alabama. And then, Jennifer, I will let you hand it off to Stacy Tobush in Alabama. And we will just go round table with Stacy Dunn. I'll be back. Dan.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Scott. I'm really looking forward to participating in the show. And especially the topics tonight. I have a lot of things to say about everything I usually do. And I'm just really looking forward to being able to reach out to more people so we can educate and show the public what is really happening today. And I hope each and every week we can do that and reach more and more people until one day we will be successful and win back our country. And now over to Jennifer.
Welcome, Dan. It's a great day to be living here in the United States, be an American, standing up for the Constitution, and telling the truth. I think that every day that we can reach another listener, or reach another voter, and inspire people, you know, to stand up for the Constitution, you know, and to vote their values is a good thing. I think we have a lot of causes out there. We got a lot of really wonderful grassroots troops that are out there, grassroots boots on the ground that are fighting. I understand that there's a lot of supporters coming out to support Jared Markham as well. And I haven't heard the report for what happened yesterday. Maybe Scott knows. But I understand that, you know, he's got a lot of people in America that are out there, you know, that are really praying for him and supporting his right to stand up for Second Amendment, First Amendment rights and such. You know, so what say you, Scott?
I'll let you hand it to Stacy, and then I've got all kinds of information on that, and I'll bring it back.
Thanks, Scott. I missed you guys last week, like really missed you. But I got to tell you, I spent the week teaching 3, 4, and 5-year-olds in Vacation Bible School at my church, and talk about a powerful movement. Scott, I actually thought about you and how you talk about teaching your niece at 3 and 4 years old on a refrigerator about how to read using a refrigerator and a marker. And we, at the end of the week, every single one of these 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, all of them knew the Bible verse. And I was so encouraged, not just about the church and the future of the church, but the future of our country. And I was uplifted last week. I missed you guys, but it was really good for me to take a step back from politics and from my life and from just the go, go, go to be immersed in an environment of teaching children about God, because when you're in that environment, it reminds you why we do what we do and why we're fighting for freedom, because the freer we are and the freer we are as a country, the more opportunity we have to spread the gospel. And it was just really, really cool, and I'm really, really excited to be back. And, yep, Scott, go ahead.
Well, we are glad to have you back. It is not the same without you. We missed you, but you know what? Vacation time is important, too, and getting other things done. And I know there's been times along the last 2.5 years where I just had to back away for a few weeks and refresh my mind. And you know, this is not an easy thing that we do. There's a lot of people in this world sitting on their couches watching sitcoms and going out and going to the theme parks and enjoying the great things that this nation has to offer, that have no clue as to what's going on in this country. They have no clue as to what kind of a train is coming down the track. But those of us that do and are fighting for it, boy, it can be very tiring sometimes. And we just do. We have to have a hard time. I'm so glad you brought up the writing on the refrigerator with the dry erase. You know, it the reason why that is so important to me, and I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, and I'll probably say this every single show that we talk about. Our schools are responsible for 20% of the illiterate in this country. Our public schools, 20% of the illiterate in this country cannot have graduated from high school in the public school system. I taught my 3-year-old niece how to read, write, and spell with pretty good handwriting, actually, on the refrigerator with a dry erase marker. Now, if I can do that sitting at home, then how do our schools, who have our children for 60,000 plus hours, with every tool in the book, millions of dollars, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars being shoved into the schools, let anybody walk through without learning how to read. Now, I can understand how we could graduate kids that can't solve an algebraic equation or have a hard time understanding the theorems in geometry or even the kind of some of the basics about grammar. I mean, you know, I even myself, I have a hard time keeping adverbs and adjectives straight sometimes. But how do we let America, let the schools, let that many students through that have them 60,000 hours plus, and they can't read, when I can do it with a three-year-old? She was reading before she hit four. She's four now. We're going to have four in a few months, and she's reading better, and she's writing better, and she's spelling better. She's up to two- and three-syllable words now. And that's not because I'm anything special. I'm special because I love her very, very much, and I took the time to do it. But it didn't take rocket science. I didn't have to bring a rocket scientist like Herman Cain into the mix to sit down and teach a three-year-old. If I can teach a three-year-old, why aren't we letting 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, even 18-year-olds out the door without the basic, simple task of teaching them how to read? Well, it's systematic of the problem, isn't it? That is a problem because, and this is going to bring up our first discussion, because our teachers are more focused on telling a young man, 14 years old, that he should not be wearing a shirt that supports his Second Amendment rights. There is a teacher that has got his nose where it does not belong. And if you've got your nose where it doesn't belong, you don't have time. I want to know, and I'd love to find out exactly how many students this teacher is taught. Of course, he's a band teacher, so those are a dime a dozen, you know. But I want to know how many students have gone through his hands that can't read. Probably not in band. They got to read music. But he doesn't have time. We don't have time to be dealing with teachers telling students what they can wear and what they can't wear. It's not against dress code. Now, I'm all for a dress code. I taught junior high, and you know, our dress code was you had a button down or a collared polo shirt and some khakis, and I'm a firm believer in dress code. Walt Disney had a brilliant, brilliant thought, and that was at grad night at Disneyland, if you make the kids dress up in certain shirt and a tie and a suit and dresses, they're less likely to jump into the rivers of America. And when you're dealing with senior high school students, that can be a problem. When kids are dressed a little bit nicer, then it solves a lot of problems. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm a firm believer in a dress code. But a Second Amendment right T-shirt is not a part of their dress code. And this teacher was not asking this student to not wear it for the reasons that I just aforementioned. Jared Markham, 14 years old, in the eighth grade, to make the story really simple, was asked by this teacher to take this shirt off because he didn't like it because it was an NRA, Second Amendment, Support Your Rights shirt. Jared did what I would have done at 44, 30 years older. Maybe he handled it like a 14-year-old would, but he stood up for his Second Amendment rights and his First Amendment rights. He stood up and said, no, I've got the constitutional right to wear this shirt. His fellow students stood behind him. The students got upset. Now, instead of calling the parents, and they could have called the parents and dealt with this behind the scenes. The weak principal, the school district, decided that it would be better to call the police. So when Jared's mom shows up at the school, she walks into the office, and there is her son in handcuffs. That is not acceptable, Logan School District. I emailed you again today. Hopefully you're listening. That is not acceptable. You needed to call the parents first. That was what needed to happen. Number two, the police should have never been involved in this. I'm going to tell you, I went to a school, I said this last week, I went to a school that was a third black, a third Portuguese, and a third cowboy. And there was a fight going on every week. And, you know, I never saw the police called. Those boys, or sometimes girls, boy, I remember a big old girl fight one time, they were hauled into the principal's office. The parents were called. They were suspended. They were punished. It was dealt with. But the school was strong enough. The school had enough oomph to handle the problem without bringing in the authorities. Food fights in the cafeteria have been going on for decades. I'm sure each one of us could tell a story about a couple of food fights. Police aren't called. School handles it in-house. The school didn't handle it in-house because they're weak. They can't handle their own discipline problems, simple discipline problems. The discipline that should have taken place was the principal should have brought that teacher in there and said, you were out of line. You were out of line. Do not do it again. This is unacceptable. That's not what happened. Well, to bring you up to date with the story now, we've got a rally coming up on Friday. Sharon Wright, an activist, and Wayne Dupree, another activist, two great patriots that I've gotten to know and love, are helping Alan Levieri with Jared's dad organize the rally at the courthouse this next Friday. If you're in West Virginia or you're close, please help participate. There are some things that are needed. We need a lot of people to show up and show support. We also need some money. It's going to take some money to put some of this on. If you'll go to the Contending for Truth Facebook page, I put the link in there. You can go to that link for a fundraiser. If we can get so much money, Donald Trump can pay attention to this, which is pretty awesome. His team will look at it. Monday, yesterday, there was a court appearance for Alan and Jared about a gag order. Thank goodness the court system had the brains to say, no, we're not gonna place a gag order. Their excuse was for protecting Jared. I got an idea. From this child abuse that's coming from the school, why don't we protect Jared by doing the right thing and admonishing the teacher and saying this won't happen again and dropping all this? You know, Jared's got some brothers and sisters. His mom and dad are you know, it's not easy when you got a good-sized family to deal with things. They got enough on their table without dealing with abuse from the school. We're going to keep on keeping on. We're going to keep talking about Jared Markham. We're going to keep talking about this fight. We are going to keep our listeners informed. I am going to continue to tell the administration of Logan Middle School and the administration of the Logan School District that they are weak. And we know they're weak. I mean, it's a simple illustration, a brand new teacher in a classroom. They have a hard time disciplining in the classroom. They go out for their discipline. They send to the principal's office that first year. As they get to be a stronger teacher, they learn to handle their problems in classroom. Same thing. It just shows weak leadership. And we're going to keep on keeping on. I'm going to pass it on to my co-host. We're going to continue to go in that order. We'll start with Dan tonight since he's our new co-host. And then we'll go to Jennifer and we'll go to Stacy for comments. But, Dan, this is not only a fight about Jared and his dad and First Amendment rights and Second Amendment rights. This is a fight for our future because Common Core wants to institutionalize this kind of a thing. And Common Core doesn't only want to do that. It wants to institutionalize this kind of teaching in the classroom. And the train is going down a road that we just don't need to do. What say you, my friend?
I agree 100%. I mean, I am appalled at the way everybody involved handled this particular incident. For one thing, it shouldn't have been anything. The child did not violate any dress codes. He was wearing a T-shirt that many kids wear. So what if it had Second Amendment rights? I mean, it was on the for the NRA. Thing is, we had a thing called freedom of speech. That was violated. Then we look at our Second Amendment. That was also violated. When the police came and handcuffed this kid, where with this common knowledge of the Constitution, what were these people thinking? Yet they go out and call in people they should have never called in, and now this thing has gone all the way up to going to court, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'm probably the oldest one of this group, and back in the 70s, you know, we had fights, and kids wore some things that maybe they shouldn't have worn. It was all handled in-house. I never, in my entire, from grade school through high school, never saw a police car go to my schools. And now these teachers and their administrations, they don't want to deal with anything. They just want to pass the buck over. They are being taken in by this mindset that, you know, they're in control, that they're going to manipulate these children into becoming adults that will become sheeples, people who just will follow along with the rest of the crowd and not thinking of what is going on within the country. We actually are seeing this now, and I saw it when I was in college, beginning in the late 70s. I saw the staff start switching more and more to the left, and it really bothered me because they were trying to influence my feelings, my personal feelings towards the Constitution, for my love, for my God, and my country. And that was really, really bothering me. The during the 70s was a big period of pushes to the left, and which is basically why we're here where we are today. And I fought it the entire time. I've been a patriot since the day I was born, and I'll be a patriot till the day I die. And I'm just really, really appalled at how this entire situation was handled. And for everybody involved, shame on them, because they are wrong, and this should not even have gone even close to as far as it has.
Jennifer?
Yes, I had myself, I was listening in. I was getting caught up in what Dan was saying. We've got to wake up. You know, there's got to be a groundswell of people that are out there willing to be a voice. You know, we've got to wake up. There's just so much going on right now. This when I heard what happened to the 5-year-old kid that was interrogated for an hour, that, you know, wet their pants over bringing a cap gun to school, you know, the things that have, you know, nowadays, the way that we're, you know, teaching our kids, this indoctrination. I was talking with someone earlier today about the indoctrination of government into our schools needs to stop. I believe that as a parent, Stacy is qualified to raise her children and homeschool if she wants to, the same with me. And what are we teaching our kids if there's no winners and no losers, you know, and if it's all about scores and there's no inspiration, I mean, all these school packets being passed out, you know, what are we doing to inspire and engage? How many kids today believe, even those that are living in poverty, believe that one day that if they want to, they could grow up and become an astronaut? You know, Frederick Douglass had a lot of inspiration. He saw that education was the key to getting off the plantation, and that inspired him. He believed that in reading books that he could go places that he had never was able to physically go. But he could go places and he could write about things. You know, he was such an inspirational man. There's so many writings about him. But, you know, we don't even, our school system doesn't even talk about it, you know. And, I mean, the things that have happened, you know, with Stacy and, the thing, you know, in Leeds, Alabama, I mean, and then there's people that are, you know, it's like politics. You know, let's just buy into this before we even know what it's about. Now we're having to go back and try to get rid of it. Same thing with health care. You know, this race to the top funding, follow the money is what I say. Follow the money. You know, so we've got to expose this. We got to get back to holding people accountable. You know, and that's what happened to Lincoln. When Frederick Douglass supported Lincoln and he became the first Republican president, he held his feet to the fire, and he paid attention to make sure that what he was voting for, the things he stood for, aligned itself with the Constitution so that it wasn't just somebody out there giving lip service to get votes, to get elected. And that's what we have to do. You know, people that are running for school board, that are making promises and offering all kinds of sweet deals, and at the end of the day, what's going on is not right for our kids, for our next generation. Stacy?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I actually would like to touch on why I think that this Jared Markham case is so important, because I believe that this teacher, this school, this principal made an example to say, if you bring this into our school, this is what's going to happen to you. This is what you're going to have to go through, to force students to be submissive to an agenda, not to an education, but to a liberal agenda. And I think that that has a major impact on our future, because right now there's enough of us who do carry guns for safety and for protection or for hobby or for hunting, that there are enough of us to stand up. But once Common Core gets a hold of our schools and start teaching these kind of things, there'll be fewer and fewer and fewer of these people. Take the homosexual agenda right now. When I was coming up in school, it was already starting to be put into television shows. It was already starting to be put into schools that this was okay. And more and more and more and more people are okay with homosexuality because of indoctrination in society. And the same thing is happening with our right to bear arms. And if teachers are allowed to do this, to intimidate students in such a way, they will not stand up for their First Amendment or Second Amendment rights, and eventually you'll end up with a society that doesn't see a problem with getting rid of the Second Amendment, because that's all they've ever been taught by their schools. And I feel like that's where the real issue is, because they're being taught that what their parents are telling them is not right, that their parents are wrong and that their parents are scary. And I remember being taught that, not directly, but in school, about, you know, accepting lesbians in high school and being, you know, we're supposed to be kind to them as Christians. Yes, and I am, and I know that it's a sin and all those things, but to accept it on a political level and the way that the government is forcing us to today, to me, I see the exact same thing happening with our right to bear arms just 10, 15 years from now. Scott?
Oh, I so agree. I so agree. And, you know, there's some real common sense that could be placed into this. You know, I saw I'm in these Common Core groups, and one of the problems with the fight with Common Core is it's a great thing. It's a two-sided sword. We've got like 5,000 people in this group that I'm an admin on. And in fact, Jennifer Gallegos, who was one of our co-hosts until she picked up homeschooling and didn't have time to dedicate to the show, she's another admin in that group. And we have a bunch of people in there who are conservative. And we have a bunch of people in there who are liberal. Because the great thing about Common Core is the liberals don't like it, the conservatives look like it, the unions don't like it, the teachers don't like it, even the left doesn't like it for the most part. But the problem is then when you start discussing some of the items that are going to be brought up in Common Core, like homosexuality in the schools or differences in religion or so on and so forth, we end up in these fights. And we're forever, almost every day, we're having to try and keep these guys down because most groups, you know, you got a bunch of conservatives in and they might argue a little bit on a few issues. But when you got a bunch of liberals and conservatives and you start bringing up some hot topic issues, it can really, really defray from what's going on in the conversation. And one of the discussions that came up this morning was religion in the schools. And, you know, it's really, really simple. Number one, for all the teachers out there that might be listening that want certain things out of the school, this great nation was built on the one-room schoolhouse with blackboards, desks, a few books, and let me tell you, a lot of the people that helped make this nation great, greatest generation, they were taught to read using the Bible. Pulled prayer out of schools. Pulled these other things out of schools. Now, there needs to be a differentiation made between God in schools and religion. I don't want religion in the schools. I don't want the teachers teaching my children or my nieces their view, their individual view of religion. That could go a whole gamut of different ways. You know, you might be Protestant and you don't want the Catholic view taught. You might be Catholic, you don't want the Protestant view taught. So they really don't need to get in and start teaching church doctrine. They don't need to start getting in and teaching in-depth doctrine from the Word of God. But there's another whole different side of it. And that's some of the basic teachings that are in the Bible about how to treat people. You know, everybody can pray together. There's, you know, we've got a problem. They're worried about people bullying in school. Well, that's really simple to take care of. You can teach that it's good to be good to your fellow man without getting into a big, giant discussion on everybody's religion. You don't have to teach the details of masturbation in order to teach young people to not be bullies. And see, so we got these two different sides, and there is a very, very simple common ground. And that is, you teach reading and writing and arithmetic. You teach people to be good to each other. You teach people to be basic. You know, there's basic principles in that word that our country was founded on. You can't pull it out. At the same time, you can't turn around and shove religion down people's throats. There is a balance of where it needs to be. Our schools don't seem to be able to find that balance. In fact, our schools want to just take religion entirely out. Well, you can't take God out of everything. Number one, we're a Christian nation, whether they like it or not. 89% of this country believes in God. There are very, very few that are dumb enough to believe that oak tree just happened. Or the human eyeballs. You know, the human eyeballs are amazing. You got two eyes. They put the picture together in the brain, and you get 3D. Hollywood is just now starting to get close to giving us 3D in a television. And it still doesn't work right. They teach evolution. That's fine. Go ahead and teach that theory. I don't have a problem with teaching theories. Teach creation alongside of it. Let the students decide. I don't like evolution. I don't like it a lot. And let me tell you, it was a great thing when I was in high school because I had a teacher who taught biology who was very, very open. She couldn't teach Christianity. She couldn't teach creationism in the school. But boy, she sure didn't know how to get a subject going so that I could speak up. There's a balance. There's a huge balance. And we're fighting the fight on the fringe. We've got the left trying to do everything they can do to take God entirely out of the schools. And you got some on the right that want to shove it in there so far that that's all they're teaching. We don't have time for that either. That needs to belong in the home. We've got a foundation that we've got. A great foundation. A Christian nation with a great foundation. Some basic principles. They're just so true. They so ring true. You know, it's not really, really hard. I made a mistake a couple of weeks ago, and I'm surprised nobody caught me. I called Thou Shalt Not Lie one of the Ten Commandments. I didn't mean that. It's not one of the Ten Commandments. But there's some other basic commandments. But God does say don't lie. You know, prayer. I don't want a teacher leading a prayer in a classroom. I want the students leading a prayer in a classroom. That's simple. The teacher doesn't need to be, because the next thing you know it, you've got a teacher that's Muslim and they're going to be wanting to give their Muslim prayers in the classroom. You got this going on, and they're going, just let the students decide. Let the students do it. Pulling prayer out of our graduation ceremonies, that's their graduation ceremony. Let them pray. See, we got a problem when we start to take God entirely out of society. We see where we're going right now. It's a mess. It's a mess because we've got a ideology in this country that is fighting really, really hard to take God out of our schools. But our schools, when they were the greatest, were when they had God in the schools. You know, You made mention of something, Stacey, and it made me think of Jan Morgan. And if you don't know who Jan Morgan is, look her up on the internet. Stacey, Jennifer, both can probably, when you come back on, give the website. I don't have it right in front of me. But you want to talk about a great patriot. Jan Morgan, when it came down to tax day down there in Alabama, as far as I'm concerned, did one of the best things in the world that could have been done. She taught some gun safety, you know? It wasn't too long ago in our schools we had gun safety classes. We had archery classes. We had some of these good classes. Why in the world, if you're worried about guns, would you not want to teach our students? Why not use the schools as a great place to give some good safety lessons? I'm all for voting for Jan Morgan to be in charge of the next administration for gun classes in the classroom. Take some of our best. You know, it is going on some places. In Maryland, there's a young girl that has been doing gun training in the classroom and participating in great things in that area and looking forward to some great scholarships. And then the laws of Maryland, it changed all that. It's insanity, folks. We've got to find the balance. We've got to find the balance. And we find the balance when we go back to the basics. You know, I don't want our politicians arguing back and forth over assault weapons. We don't need to argue over assault weapons. If I were running for office and a news media person asked me where I stood on an assault weapons ban, I'd say that is a non-issue. The only issue is the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution guarantees the right to bear arms and protects the states from federal infringement on those rights. Now, if New York wants to be dumb enough to step all over the Constitution because they've got one city that's stupid, then let them have that fight. Why is Alabama involved in that fight? Why is Montana involved in that fight? Why is Wyoming involved in that fight? They shouldn't have to be spending money on that fight. The federal government does not have the authority to do an assault weapons ban, a cannon ban, a handgun ban, a pop gun ban, any kind of weapon. They don't have that authority. That discussion doesn't even need to be there. And then we let capitalism take over. You know, I think it'd be great if the gun if the gun issues totally left the federal discussion, went to the states, and I would love it if New York would totally ban every weapon in the whole wide world. I love that idea. Because I'm going to tell you what will happen. New York will go down the tubes. And then capitalism will take over. And then people will walk. Not because of guns. But because it won't be a very safe place to be. You can go to different places around the country where this is very, very true. Chicago is worked really hard. Very, very hard. Mayor Daley, he was very, very much wanted to take away every single gun from everybody. And it's one of the most dangerous places in the country. And people move out. They move with their feet. They move with their pocketbook. And let Illinois have this argument. Let them have it at a state level. If they want to duke each other out, then when I moved to Texas, I'd have to be in the middle of that argument. Being out here in California, I'd have to be here. But then the states can fight this. Fighting it on a federal level is insane, because any kind of fight on that level goes back to religion. Federal government doesn't have anything to do with this. If New York schools want to take every piece of God out of their schools, let them do it. Should not be fought on a federal level. And then as soon as their schools take God out of your schools entirely, New York City, go ahead. You'll see what happens. And then the people can walk. They can move to Texas with me. Dan, what say you?
Well, let's start off with freedom of religion and how it pertains to our schools. If we go back to the origins of this nation, the Puritans came over here to escape religious persecution from England. They established the Massachusetts Bay colonies, and unfortunately they followed in the footsteps of the very thing they ran away from, until a Protestant preacher by the name of Roger Williams elected to go south about 60 miles from Boston and establish Providence Plantations. He was the first advocate for actual freedom of religion and separation of church and state. Well, obviously it took a little while for it to catch on, but as more and more people were escaping Europe to be able to practice their own religious beliefs with freedom, the idea slowly caught on, and by the signing of the Constitution, it became such a big issue within this country that it was the very first amendment in the Bill of Rights. So we move up to today, and what we took for granted, our forefathers used God as an inclusive name to include all religions. They believed wholeheartedly that each person should have that right to believe what they believe in, and without worrying about being persecuted by the government. Now we move into the 60s. There was a movement for various religions, and they started removing our constitutional rights by saying, you can't show this, you can't show this, it has to be in private. And slowly but surely, all of a sudden, the whole meaning of God within our country was being pushed behind closed doors. When I was growing up, we had the Pledge of Allegiance, and kids were allowed to believe whatever they wanted. That was their parents' responsibility. My father was a professor at the University of Rhode Island, and so my grade school, high school, junior high was a conglomerate of everybody. We had every religion under the sun under our schools, and we all got along perfectly fine together. We had no problems with celebrating Christmas or anything. Everybody got together. We had fun. My friends, I had Jewish friends, I had Hindu friends. It didn't matter because, you know, we accepted each other for who they were inside, and that's what was important. And our teachers and the faculty above them only encourage that. They encourage people to stay together. We're Americans first. And people seem to forget that. They take religion and try to make an issue out of it. And what they've done is they've taken a United States and have tried to divide it, have tried to tear it apart, tried to create arguments between different groups. And this is one of our biggest mistakes. You cannot remove God from this country. And if you take anybody who visits Washington, it's carved in stone. In virtually every federal building, God is mentioned at one time or another. Then we go on and move on to the Second Amendment. For anybody who would like to, I wrote a post a week or two ago on the Second Amendment where I went word for word breaking down what is in the Constitution. And the first thing about the Second Amendment, it was never designed for people to go out hunting or skeet shooting or whatever. It was designed for a common defense of the local community. And it says, in black and white, it says, for the establishment of a well-trained militia. I think what they used is, I can't remember right off the top of my head, but what they were saying is that every person in the community was responsible for keeping this militia going. And that was to protect the town. This is why we see in the older towns the old armories. This was that found the center of activity when it came to the defense. And this way, each county could defend itself, and collectively the state could defend itself. Our forefathers had the foresight to see that there was a possibility that the federal government would become too powerful and totalitarian that it would try to take over the state rights. So for the state to protect themselves, they had their own militia. So in the event that the government try a hostile takeover of the given states, they were able to mount a defense against this. And hopefully other states on either side would join in and unite against this totalitarian government. And see, there was some meaning of the Second Amendment. So when people ask me about the Second Amendment rights, I say, listen, there should be no limitations to what you are allowed to own. If you want to own an assault rifle, an automatic weapon, everything. I am for complete freedom in that area because, for one thing, when our forefathers were writing the Second Amendment, they wanted enough defensive power that they could stop an advancing, much more powerful group from coming in. That means you've got to have modern weapons. And obviously the average person cannot afford that, so you keep that in the armory. But you allow each individual, I'm an advocate for each individual being armed, so that in the event of what actually we're seeing today, if this goes further, in the event that it does, we can protect ourselves. This is the whole foundation of the Second Amendment. And the far left has wanted to make this an entirely different issue, trying to, say, oh, these weapons are terrible, or if you have a big clip in your weapon, you can kill more people. The fact is, in any of the cases of these shootings in these schools, had the faculty been armed, the kids would have never done it. They would have never been able to get away with it. 5 or 10 rounds off, and it would be over. And see, this is the point they missed. When you take away the weapons of the people who are law-abiding, what are you doing? You're giving it to the criminal element. So all we're doing by pushing for more and more restriction on the Second Amendment is we're exposing ourselves to more and more danger. Jennifer, over to you.
I was remembering, I was at just a few months ago, I went to a four-hour seminar on the making of America, and the gentleman that was hosting this from Arizona talked about, you know, he's a teacher, professor at a charter school, and he said that we teach the Constitution, we teach the history of the Constitution, and we read scripture from the Bible, and we're able to get away with it is because it's a part of the historical documents of what our founding fathers wrote about, what is a part of history. But if all these states get indoctrinated in the Common Core, our Constitution is going to be history. It's going to be toast. It'll just be a piece of paper, you know, this document that's, you know, sitting in this glass case in Washington, you know, just for people to look at. And we've got to do what we can do to protect our Constitution and put it back into our schools as a living, breathing document. You know, how many schools now make it mandatory that you be tested on knowledge of the Constitution before you graduate from the 12th grade? How many college students can say that they know what the true meaning of the Second Amendment rights is about? You know, our Fourth Amendment rights. It is really time that we as Americans wake up. You know, right before Hitler got elected, people were excited. They had been watching all this, you know, hype, media propaganda, you know, and I think that we could learn a lot from Douglas in that he self-taught himself. We need to get out there and not just listen to what's on television, but we really need to get out there and investigate for ourselves. You know, it's I'm telling you, as parents, if we don't take a stand, you know, sad days are coming ahead. You know, we've got to wake up, you know, or we're going to find ourselves in a situation because in your local city, county, if you're electing school board officials that don't support our Constitution, I hate to say it, the time is now. We don't need to wait. Otherwise, it's going to be too late. I want to thank everyone tonight for just a wonderful call. I'm going to need to step off here. I have some other things that I've got to attend to real quick. But I pass it over to Stacy. And you guys keep on keeping on, as our favorite patriot, D-Rock, always sings about. Stacy?
Thanks, Jennifer. I actually want to touch on something that Dan said about how we will always be a Christian nation. And as much as I hate to disagree, I have to, because if things go the way that they're going right now, I'm afraid that that's going to be washed out. And here's why I say that. Scott, you know this, I'm a college student also, along with being a single mom, an employee, and every single other thing you could possibly do. And last summer, I guess, I took a government class. And in the government class, it was teaching the basics on the founding of the country and explaining the Constitution. And this book is teaching college students that America was founded as a basically as a business experiment. It was founded based on business principles and trying something new, trying to make money. It was founded by rich people. It was founded on greed. And then a small sentence about, oh, and there was religious persecution. So as they're writing these history books for colleges, they're phasing out the core of our country, the morals and the principles and the founders and their writings. I've never once in the entire history of my education been asked to read the Federalist Papers or been asked to explore not just the founding document, but what caused the founders to believe what they believe. I learned more from that constitutional seminar that Jennifer spoke about than I've ever learned about America in my entire life. And I think that that's the crisis that we're in with Common Core, because Jennifer was talking about how documents are just going to be behind glass one day for people to go look at. The problem with that is with Common Core, children have already stopped learning cursive. Cursive has been taken out of the curriculum. They aren't taught how to read it, how to write it, anything. It's a gone language. Well, our founding documents were written in cursive, so 10 years from now when these students go to visit the documents, they might as well be looking at Latin because they're not going to be able to read them. So as they're writing these history books, as they're rewriting the purpose of the founding, when they start trying to educate themselves and go read the documents on their own and try to learn, they won't be able to because nobody ever taught them how to read these things. And to me, that terrifies me, and that's why I engage with my children to teach them everything that I know so they can pass it on. But if there's not a large group of people who are awake to the consequences of taking things like that and twisting them, we are in serious trouble in the future. Scott?
Oh, I agree. And let me tell you, I understand what you're both saying. And I have to really agree with both of you. I think what Dan's saying is true. We will always be a Christian nation. But that's only going to happen if we take action. It's only going to happen if we continue to fight. I believe if we lose that, it's going to be our fault. I believe it starts in the churches. I really do. I don't believe it starts in politics. That's one of the reasons why I really like the work that Neil Mammon does. It's why I like the work that Shannon Wright does. One of our biggest problems right now, we're dealing with some of these political issues, such as homosexuality, is the churches in this country, for decades now, have turned to mush. Going to church to a young person in this day and age is about going for entertainment. It's not going about work. The reason that the church was instituted in the second chapter of Acts on the day of Pentecost by the 12 apostles, and the reason why in the first century they gathered together was for not entertainment purposes. It was for the purpose of worshiping God. It was for the purpose of fellowshipping with one another, like-minded individuals, to help support each other so that you could go out during the week, be better facilitated to give Satan an old kick in the nose when he's right behind you. And we've turned most of, especially in organized religion, our churches into a big entertainment center. Our young people go to church to hear the band. They go to church to have fun, and if it's not fun, they don't go. And that's a huge problem. Those same churches are not preaching morality. They're not preaching that it is a sin for two people to live together without the benefits of marriage. We got a bunch of Christians running around this country right now calling themselves conservatives, and they will fight to the very end to stand by marriage between being a man and a woman, and I believe that 100%. But they're not doing anything in the churches to fight for what true marriage is in the first place, what God ordained it for. So we got a bunch of young people that are confused, and it's not their fault. It's not their fault they're confused. It's not their fault that they don't understand. Well, if it's not wrong to live together, well, you know, we got a bunch of people in our church that live together and nobody says anything. Well, then why are we, if that's okay, then why are we complaining about homosexuality? Well, you know, homosexuality is only in the Bible 6 or 7 different times. I've read that thing over and over and over again, I promise you. It's in there very clear. It's very in there very concise. But it's not in there a whole lot. But adultery and fornication permeate it. But you're not hearing that from the pulpits. Starts in the churches. instead of preaching the Bible, instead of encouraging people to read, to study the scriptures for themselves. They don't do that. The preacher gets done as quick as he can so the band can play, so the entertainment can start. And that's not what it's all about, folks. And so our churches are falling down flat. Our churches are not preaching what is true. They're preaching what feels good. You know, I love the scripture, those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up like eagles with wings of great length. They shall run and not grow weary. They shall walk and not faint. He brings strength to the weary and power to their saints. And that looks great on the wall with a picture of an eagle or a flag. It looks great. But that's not all the Bible. That's not all that's in there. You know, we live in a society where we put our Bible on our coffee table instead of in our hearts. We want the people that come into our house to look at us and think we're religious. You know, we had D-Rock and Kim Paris a few weeks back on politics and religion. We had this discussion because the term religion has been totally destroyed. I'm almost with Kim. I'm so tired of the term religion because we've redefined it. We've redefined what the word faith means. We believe that faith is just a belief. Well, no, faith is the Greek word pistis. It's an action. It's a verb. Apostle Paul said, you show me your faith without works, without action, and I'll show you a faith that is dead. We're not preaching that in our churches. We're preaching a faith that says as long as you show up for the band and as long as you give your money, everything's okay. And you can go live however you want the rest of the weekend. It's okay. And that's not the case in all of our churches across this nation. But I'm going to tell you, it's in the case of bulk of our churches in this nation. And that's the foundation of the problem that we're talking about. And if we would fix that, we would fix a lot of our voters. Then on top of that, we've got two-thirds of the Christian community that doesn't even bother to vote. They're not paying attention to what's going on in this country. They don't realize that the churches all across the nation are having to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on insurance just in case they get sued for saying that homosexuality is wrong from the pulpit. I'm not afraid to say it's wrong. Do I want to make it a law that two men can't live together in this society? No, I don't want to legislate that. But they do, and their bedroom is fine. Go ahead and do it. But don't take what you're doing, your sin that you're committing, and shove it on everybody else. You know the big key to all this, and I. If the gay community would really realize this, they'd really win a little bit further. You know, we had Prop 8 passed with 60% of the vote in liberal California. The reason that happened was because California was not afraid of redefining marriage, which really they should be, but that wasn't the problem. You see, a few weeks before the vote, two kindergarten teachers, two lesbians, decided to take their class to the steps of City Hall and make those kids watch their marriage ceremony. And California turned around and said, enough is enough. But it's got to start in the churches. It's got to go back to our political system. We are a Christian nation. We're the greatest nation that's ever been on the face of this earth. And as long as we stand by those basic Christian principles, in our schools, in our homes, in our churches, we're going to continue to thrive. And this is where I totally agree with Dan. Unfortunately, I know too much about Old Testament history. And I know that the pattern continues to repeat itself. The Bible says things will wax worse and worse. And we know that the beginning, the story of Genesis, in the first 11 chapters, tells us a lot about humanity. You know, that first chapter tells you about God, the creator, and the creation. The second chapter, Adam and Eve, the second story, there's five stories before Abraham. The second story, Adam and Eve, tells about the relationship between man and God. The third story, Cain and Abel, tells about the relationship between man and man. You know, you come to the time of Noah, and man's messed it all up, and God washes away all the sin. And then the fourth story, the one we oftentimes overlook, is the story of the Tower of Babel. That tells the story about the relationship between man, society and God. And that's such an important story. Because what it says is the further society gets away from God, the more of a mess you get in. You see, old Nimrod, he and both biblical history and secular history points this out. Nimrod was trying to do two things. Tell me if they sound familiar. He was trying to take God out of society, the mention of God out of society, and he was trying more and more and more to make the government take care of the people. Sound familiar? Well, you see, that's the problem. I know that the pattern continues to repeat itself. And I know that if the Christians don't stand up in this nation and fight, Bud's right. I'm sorry, Stacy's right. We won't be a Christian nation anymore. And I know that if we stand up and do the right thing, if we keep on keeping on, and it's got to start in our churches, we will always be a Christian nation. Because God will always take care of his people as long as they take care of making sure that they retain God in their knowledge. You know, you leave the story that we find in the book of Genesis, and you go on through the time of Moses and the Israelites growing, and you come to Joshua, and they go into the land and they conquer the land. And then you turn from the end of Joshua, where Joshua gives his farewell address. He's got great things to say. He tells the people, God is a jealous God. Do what he says. Just follow him. Just trust him, and he will take care of you. And the people said, we will, Joshua. We will. We will. And he said, be strong and courageous. And the people said, we will. And you turn the next page to the book of the Judges. Judges tells us that the people failed to retain God in their knowledge. We find a series of six major oppressions from the Midianites, from the Mesopotamians, from the Philistines. We find the Midianites coming in and just wiping out every crop, every animal just in the middle of spring. We find the people in such terror and such bad situations that they're eating their own children. Sorry to be graphic. That's what happens. And we find the period of the Judges is a very dark time because people refuse to retain God in their knowledge. You have that repeated in the book of Romans chapter 1 when he talks to the Gentiles. He says, you guys don't want to keep God within your mind, within your grasp. Well, you know, it's one thing when the nation doesn't do that. Another thing when the Christians don't do that. And I am sorry to say, Christian America, big, little C Christian America, you're not retaining God in your knowledge. You're retaining entertainment in your knowledge. We're entertained all over the place. We get up in the morning, we turn the TV on, we turn the computer on, we turn this on, we turn that on. We get in the car to go to church, and if we don't continue on that entertainment, we're bored. Well, it's a sad situation. So I just have to agree with both of you. I know exactly where both of you are coming from. And that's why this fight is so important. But we're going to keep on keeping on. I'm going to pass it on down to Dan.
Well, another thing we're missing today is religion is lacking at the home. And all of this starts really from the home. And if we do not teach our children religion, from day one, I was raised Roman Catholic. So from my very first memories, the church was always in my life. My great uncle was a Franciscan priest. Religion was a very focal point. The fundamentals of how to treat other people were taught to me well before I ever entered into schools. And my belief was established by the time of my first communion, solid in the core of my body. As I learned more and more about the Bible, the Old and New Testaments, and I was asked, I was about to be confirmed, and they asked, what do you want your Christian name to be known as? And I chose Moses. My confirmation name is Moses, and I chose him for a very specific reason. Because he led the Israelites. He was a major player in the foundation of where we were going to go and the coming of Christ. He was the person who prepared us for that. So Christianity, to me, is something that has been in my life all along. And sadly to say, as I grew older, I got more and more involved with other things, and I needed a reaffirmation. Last year, I had a heart attack, went into cardiac arrest, and had a near-death experience, and had a real heart-to-heart with God in that near-death experience. I'll go into that some other time. But that was my reaffirmation. It was my almost, it was like a renaissance to me. It was a rebirth in my belief in my religion. So it has to start at home. We need to lay the groundwork first at home, then let the church mold that, teach the teachings of the Bible, and educate these. It's essentially a school. It's a place to learn. It's a place to share your common belief with others. It's a place where we learn how to work with each other, how to unite as one. And then I took this into school where I was exposed to many, many different religions. But my belief itself carried me through to accept these other people for who they were and not to judge them. If they asked me a question, I gave it to them. We shared our religious belief back and forth, and we got along fine. It was wonderful. You know, it was showed how people from different walks of life from all over the world can get along just fine. The great experiment that we keep on talking about is that very thing, how we can unite as one people and be extremely diverse at the same time. It was founded on religion, and yes, because of majority rules, obviously, 89% of Americans are Christian, so it's going to be the most prevalent of all of the beliefs. But on the other hand, like we take Christmas, let's use Christmas as an example. Christmas evolved as a Christian holiday, as we all know. But as time went on, it said goodwill to all men, meaning that regardless of your own belief, I'm going to give you a piece, you know, I'm going to show you love and compassion. And then, you know, we can work together as one, yet be separate. This is the whole core of the nation. We have 50 individual states for a reason, is that we are 50 individual states united under one cause. And this is what they are failing to teach at home, well, in the schools. And when it comes to religion today, when I was younger, every Sunday, kids didn't even bother trying to get a hold of each other because we knew we all had to go to church, and that was our Sunday morning thing. And once we got home, we all had a breakfast together and talked things over, and it was a family time. So Sunday from, you know, 7 a.m. to noon was dedicated to the family and our religion. Today, that doesn't exist. Today, maybe 1 in 10 families, maybe 1 in 5, I don't know what the numbers are, but very few families go to church anymore. They no longer sit down as a family unit. And with losing that, with losing, removing God from the picture, we're losing everything. And what is happening today is a prime example. We have a president trying to push on a religion that is based on hate, based on terrorism and killing people, and removing the religions based on love, peace, and unity. And this is going to be the downfall of this nation. Unless we stand up as a people, we the people, it says it right in the Constitution, we the people need to stand up, put the pressure on the politicians, and not give up until they start listening and they are willing to start making a stand, because they'll know in a very short period of time they're going to be looking for a new job. Stacy, over to you.
Absolutely right. I mean, if ever there has been a time to just get rid of these people that are so out of touch, because 86% of the country believes in God. So I have to assume that when the DNC has their convention and they get up and denounce God three times, that they are by no means representing their constituents. And it's horrific what's happening. Even on the Republican side, it just they're ignoring us and going and arming Al-Qaeda and Republicans supporting that. It just it baffles me. And I can't remember who said it, but almost on a daily basis now, with all the things that come out in the news, I think I tremble when I remember, or I tremble for my country when I remember that our God is just. Because the things that we as Christians sit back, and I mean Christians as a whole, not the three of us, but sit back and allow to happen in this country, like the homosexual marriage and with the students being taught about homosexual foreplay in the schools, if 80% of the country stood up and said no, they wouldn't have a choice but to listen to us. But we've become such a pop culture Christian nation that it's kind of disgusting, and it's not acceptable. And if we remember those roots as Christians and we went back to that, I think that more people would be in touch with the Constitution, because the Constitution is very much in line with the Bible. Even in the Second Amendment, in the Bible, it talks about how people took up their arms to protect themselves. They had swords then, but still, it's our duty as parents to protect our children and to do God's work. And sometimes that, you know, requires certain things. And it's our job as Christians to spread the gospel, which is the First Amendment. And fairness is a Christian idea, and being kind to others. And everything that the Democrats and the liberals, the progressives, claim to be is really what Christianity is about kindness and charity and taking care of everybody and accepting everyone and loving everyone. That's who we are. But we're so degraded on such a nasty level, which Christians always have been. Scott, I sometimes get scared reading the Old Testament and how eerily it lines up with what we're seeing today. But you know, history does repeat itself, and I tremble watching it repeat itself, raising children in this society. Scott?
Oh, amen. And to bring it right back around, I mean, it just all comes back to the three legs of where I say our problem is in our country. And it's all from a lackadaisical attitude. It's all from a lack of education, and that's in our judicial system. We can see that with Free Don Miller. Don't forget to listen about Free Don Miller this Thursday night. We can see it in our churches, and we can see it in our politics. And it's part of it is the natural, the human nature of man. The more we get lazy. You know, there was a day when, and I use this illustration, and we'll bring Rodney Stanhope. We got him sitting on the line. Excited to have him on again tonight. There was a time in our country 100 years ago. Hey, Rodney. There was a time in our country where at Christmas time a young child was lucky to get one toy, and oftentimes it was handmade. And that child picked up that toy, and they cherished that toy. And they kept very good care of that toy. Well, now we live in a society where when it comes to Christmas, and I love Christmas with my nieces, man, I go to the dollar store and I buy like all these things and wrap them all up separately, and then I get them their real nice gift, and then maybe a gift that's more along the lines of something they need. But within a few days, you know, nobody knows where any of that's at, and it's because we got too much. You know, we live in our nice houses. We got carpet, and we got air conditioning, and we got television. We've got such great technologies, and all these things tend to make man lazy. You know, we live in a society where we've got a good bulk of our society doesn't know what's going on in politics. They don't want to know. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear the bad thing because they're living the good life. And history repeats itself, Stacey. You're so right. When man gets to that point, that's when man falls apart. Went to the book of Judges. You know, there's this routine that goes over and over again in the book of Judges, and here's what it is. Everything's going good. And when things are going good, then the Israelites, they tended to forget about God. And as they forgot about God, they things started to go downhill. And they kept going downhill until things got really, really bad. And then as soon as things got really, really bad, they prayed to God and asked for help. And God gave them help, sent them a judge, and things got good again. And then as soon as things got good again, they started to forget about God again. And they go in that circle. Man goes in that circle. We've done that all in our lives. Every one of us can claim Christianity all we want. We've all fallen and had ups and downs in our lives. That happens also in the family. That happens also in society. And that little circle just repeats itself over and over and over again. That's why we have the book of Judges, is to learn that. And it's going on in our judicial system. Our judicial system is horrific right now. Partially because the federal government's got its nose in there so far that they don't even know what's going on. It's going on in our churches, and it's going on in our government, in our political system. We got a bunch of leaders that don't stand up. We got a bunch of preachers that don't stand up, and we got a bunch of judges that don't stand up for what is right. But you know what? It gets kind of lonely out here in California sometimes. Let me tell you. All my friends back east have all the fun, and all I get left with is this old blog talk radio show, except for Rodney Stanhope here in California with me, who's also fighting the fight. He was on last week. Glad to have you back, Rodney. Put your two cents worth in.
Oh, I think the lady who was on earlier, I mean, she said it perfectly. It's if you don't remember history, you're doomed to repeat it. I mean, I just love hearing the liberals argue how our Constitution and our rights and our amendments are all living documents that can be changed. And it's like, no, our country was built and founded on Christian principles, bottom line, period. I don't even understand how they can argue. It makes about as much sense as Bush pioneered 9/11. It's just sometimes you hit that point where it's not even worth arguing with them anymore because they're not going to get it. I mean, is that pathetic? You know, in California, you and I are fighting the battle. The liberals have a 2/3 supermajority, and they can pretty much do whatever they want, pass whatever laws they want. Now they're wanting men and women, or girls and boys, as young as sixth grade, can have to share bathrooms because someone might be confused about their sexuality, and the stuff they're teaching is just, you know, in California passed the 74% no to gay marriage, and it got overturned by our Ninth Circuit Circus Court of Appeals. So, you know, I don't know. How do you explain to somebody history when they simply don't get it?
Well, and Ronnie, they don't want to get it. You know, I remember, and this didn't ever make the news media. I just happened to be watching, and I caught it, and this was years before I was a political activist and active on Facebook and had a way to get things out. But Jacques Chirac, whatever his name was, over in France, made the statement that history does not repeat itself. And I watched that, and I went, you've got to be kidding me. He said that, and I thought it would go viral. I thought, man, they're going to get a hold of that and crucify you, buddy. And nobody said a word. But see, that's the lies of the left. The left cannot tell the truth and make it work. And it all goes down to, and Stacey's going to love this, it all goes back down to hurdles. It goes down to the very basic principle that the Bible teaches. There is a foundational, basic principle that everything else lays on, and that is the principle of hurdles. Hurdles, you are born, and the rest of your life is about jumping hurdles. Christianity helps teach you, God helps teach you, how to handle those hurdles. The way God says to handle the hurdles is, number one, do it my way, and number two, jump your hurdle. But the left, everything they do is all about removing hurdles. When it comes to the Second Amendment issue, It's all about removing hurdles. When it comes to, in the schools, bullying and all these things, it's about removing hurdles. Instead of teaching our young people, you know, you're always going to be bullied. You're going to be 80 years old, and there's always going to be somebody that's going to bully you. Instead of dealing with that, they try and physically remove all the bullies. Force everybody to not be a bully. Never going to accomplish that task. And we can apply that concept to every single one. And California is the greatest example. Our legislator up there, and the country, and California doesn't agree with them. But everybody in California is playing at Magic Mountain. They're playing at Disneyland. They're watching Roseanne. They're watching whatever. And they're not paying attention to what's going on in Sacramento. They don't agree with all that. And Sacramento is just busy away trying to remove every single Californian's hurdle so that everything, the government can take care of us. And it's causing insanity. And, Rodney, you're familiar with Sacramento.
Oh, yeah.
And you're familiar with running up and down the state of California. When you run into the people in the state of California, what percentage would you say of the people that you talk to, and I know you talk to a lot of political people because it's kind of skew this, what percentage would you say absolutely has no clue as to what's going on in Sacramento?
Oh, geez. 60% in California that don't pay attention, because I've even heard it. After we passed Prop 14, the top two-tier primary system, and people go, well, that's stupid, man. Why do they get to do that? Because you voted for it. Well, but it said on TV it was the Voter Rights Act. Well, you didn't read it, did you? They rushed through their lives. And I think, actually, you mentioned removing hurdles. It's more than just removing hurdles. The real issue is they want to remove, in order to make us all equal, you know, get to the middle class and stop striving to be better. We don't do valedictorian anymore. We don't have trophies anymore, because that means somebody might lose. We've become a bunch of politically correct pansies, especially in California, where everything is about everyone being equal. No more strive to be the best. No more strive to be number one. No more drive to innovate or initiate or succeed, because that's how you implement social government, is stop everyone in the middle. And that's when Obama talks about the middle class. That's what he wants. Everyone just stop. Don't try any harder. Do the bare minimum.
That's right. They don't want what we would call a middle class. They want exactly what you're saying. They want everybody to be the same. And I would say Barack Obama doesn't even like the middle class in America. I think he's trying to fight the middle class in the world. He wants the entire world to all be on the same playing field. He wants to lower America in order to make everything better. He wants to take all of the money from America and just spread it around the whole wide world. And, you know, on its onset, that almost sounds good, doesn't it? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just take all the money, put it all in a basket, and then share it with everybody so that everybody had a little bit? Wouldn't that be great? But
yeah,
it doesn't
great,
work.
Except for, you know, their way of doing it is, you know, this new program they have, Common Core, that they're trying to implement now. And it's dumbed down our country and our children to not be successful or not be leaders in the global economy, that we're subservient to them, you know. And actually, at our local fair up here in El Dorado County, they had the Republican Party had a booth and had, we were joking because they had a math test or a school test from 1895. And even I'm looking at this question going, what? And, you know, name and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic kind of thing. And the weight of bushels of hay. And I'm like thinking, damn, in today's economy, at school they teach, you know, if a train leaves California 60 miles an hour, when's it get to New York? And the answer's on time.
Exactly. Let's pass it to Dan. Dan.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. The way things are going today is they are trying to dumb down our students. And I lived in California for 11 years in Palm Springs and fought very hard in politics. I worked with Mary Bono on her campaign and arrived just when Sonny Bono had passed away. And I met my best friend is actually, I met in Palm Springs, Kip Allen, who makes me look like a liberal. So I know there are conservatives out there, but as you said, people in California just are so into their own little gangs, their own little gig, that they aren't paying attention to what's going on in the state. And it's sad because California is such a beautiful, beautiful state. There are certain parts, San Diego, for instance, where people are more conservative and more active in politics. I was a little bit sheltered in that because I was racing sailboats out of yacht clubs, so I didn't see the entire picture. But amongst the clubs, people were politically active, and they were trying to make changes. When I first got there, Wilson was governor, and the state was thriving. Unfortunately, after he left office, we all know what happened. The state just made a downturn, and it's been going ever since. I left California not really because of politics. I left California because of Hurricane Charlie, and my father was living here in Florida in Punta Gorda, Ground Zero, and I couldn't get a hold of him for a week. So I didn't know whether he was alive or dead, and I decided being 2,500 miles away was too far, so I elected to move back east. And then I'm seeing this evolution starting to spread from California through the rest of the country, where this lack of concern, this lack of worry about what's going on in this nation. I posted the other day that Supreme Court ruling on the Fifth Amendment, and I was so furious. I had to sit down and relax for a few hours because I was so angry at what they were doing to our Fifth Amendment rights. I mean, essentially, what was passed the other day has totally removed the Miranda rights. And, you know, anything we say will be used against us in a court of law, meaning that now the government has the ability to throw any of us in jail for any reason they feel like without just cause. So we're losing our fundamental rights, our God-given rights, and people are just sitting there like a bunch of sheep grazing, not paying attention to what's going on today, and we're just watching this country deteriorate bit by bit. They're chiseling away at the Bill of Rights a little bit at a time. Each time, it does each little thing usually, okay, I can accept that, and people just go on without even thinking. They don't realize the ramifications behind what is taking place. And soon, one day, they're going to wake up and see none of it's left. The Constitution is gone. They aren't going to know why, because they've never been taught the history. They don't understand the foundations of what this country was formed on. They don't understand the building blocks as we went through. Half of them don't even know what the Federalist Papers are, let alone having read them. And the other half barely knows the Constitution. And we're sitting here today, you know, the kids today are coming out of school. I've talked to them about our founding fathers, and I teach my grandchildren about them, about John Adams. I took them to where Paul Revere is buried in Boston, and Crispus Attucks, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And see, I'm trying to raise my children. I tried to raise my children with the understanding of what this nation was founded on. One of our favorite places to go was the Wayside Inn. Longfellow's Wayside Inn. And I showed them. I said, so listen, my children, and you shall hear the midnight ride of Paul Revere. I said, that was written right here. And then we showed the one-room schoolhouse you were talking about, Scott, that where Mary Had a Little Lamb was written about. That schoolhouse is actually on that property. And I took them to Walden's Pond, showing them Henry David Thoreau, you know, and his idea and his concept of civil disobedience, how you can stand up for your rights and not do it in a violent manner. All of this was in my children's education. Then, unfortunately, I'm trying to pass it on to my grandchildren as well, but the whole idea is we must understand where we came from to get to this point now and why we are falling apart as a nation, where it began in the 60s, you know, with, well, actually in the 50s with the filibuster on the ERA in 1957, where the Democrats blocked the first ERA amendment put on by Dwight Eisenhower. And then yet today on their website, they're saying they've been advocates for equal rights for 200 years. Well, as we know, that's a crock of baloney. I mean, history shows that. History demonstrates that. We have this bad propensity as species of continuing to do the same things over and over and over. History does repeat itself, and it's done so for the last 5,000 years. As far back as recorded time, we have seen that the things do go over and over and over, and the reason people give is, well, things are so different now. No, they aren't. Humans will be humans will be humans. That is one thing that will never change, which means you're going to have the same problems no matter what the toys are around us. We have to deal with them. When we remove religion, the foundations of our nation, and we take that away, what are we left with? We're left with nothing. And this is what they are doing in government today. They're removing all these little obstacles, and by the time they're done taking all the little pieces away, we're going to have one big void. We're going to have nothing, and it's just going to continue that way. You know, when we look at, when we talk about spreading the wealth, well, I was an economics major in college, and we studied Marxism, and we studied the fundamental flaws behind the idea. One of them that they use today as an argument being so terrible is greed. But greed inspires creativity. It inspires people to achieve more. And through that, it works backwards. I'll give an example. A friend of the family started a little company in 1980 called American Power Conversion. Well, by 1986, this guy started out with nothing, created the 16th fastest growing company in the United States. He was also the highest paying company in the state, a non-union shop, and right now he's growing bison in Florida. The whole idea is the American dream does exist for those who want it. And if we return to our foundations, we can spread the wealth through giving the people the chance to earn it for themselves. Give the people the opportunities, and they will take advantage of it. The old saying of give a man a fish, you'll feed him for a day. Teach him how to fish, you'll feed him for life. It's so very true. We can avoid this downturn. We have the knowledge. All we need is to open the people's eyes and wake them up and make them go out there and start keeping on, keeping on, fight the battle, keep the pressure on, and eventually we can win. Stacy, over to you.
what a great point. You touched on a couple of things that I want to follow up with. First of all, the spreading of the liberal filth. I can't think of anything else to call it but that, that seems to be seeping out of California, sorry, Scott, and into the rest of the nation. It's hit Alabama also. It's hit everywhere. But a couple of weeks ago, the Alabama Democratic Party had Louis Farrakhan come travel the state to protest or to fight for whatever the Voter Rights Act on that, you know, the ruling came down today on that. And it was appalling, the lack of reaction that came out of people, that the leader of Islam was standing in Selma speaking hate when Martin Luther King would have just fallen over the filth that comes out of his mouth and the hate. And the black people of Alabama were on the news that night talking about how they had fought so hard for their right to vote, and now Shelby County, Alabama, is trying to take their right to vote away. I mean, just lies. And the media, even in Alabama, is so liberal that they go along with it and they don't challenge it. And the Republicans don't challenge those talking points. Andrew Breitbart had a saying that he would say to these people that they just didn't know how to come back from. And I've kind of taken it as my own way of thought. When people go on these "you're a racist" rants and try to challenge you with emotion when you stand up for you believe for what you believe in, he would just look at him and go, "So, you know, the fact that whether or not I'm racist or whatever doesn't change facts, doesn't change history, doesn't change a voter's rights case. It doesn't change anything. Now let's get that out of the way and talk about facts." And I think that people are so sissified by this government and political correctness that they're afraid to stand up and challenge what they know is wrong. And I think that that's what's happened in the churches. When Farrakhan was down here, I remember being so impressed with the preacher of 16th Street Baptist Church, because he said, "No, you cannot come speak in my church." And then I took a step back and said, why am I impressed that a preacher did that? Because every preacher in this country should say that someone who's spewing hate about white people and Jews should not be preaching from a Baptist pulpit. Like, I think it just goes down to the core of morals and just good American values. And even separate from faith and religion, the American way that was just 10 years ago of trying your hardest and of doing what you know is right, regardless of what people are going to think about you, because that's how I raise my voice. If you're doing what please God and you're doing what you feel in your heart is right, it doesn't matter who you offend. It doesn't matter whose toes you step on, because at the end of the day, at the end of your life, the person you answer to will say, "Well done." Who cares what the person across the street thinks if you're standing up for what's right? And if more people took on that attitude, if more people just had the guts to stand up and say, "You're wrong," we might not be in this position. We might not all be scared, and we might have a little bit more liberty back. Scott?
Oh, so true, so true. You know, and Stacey, you brought it right back down to the basics. Is we're not standing up for ourselves. You know, we are. I know Rodney is. I've watched him. I know I am. I know Stacey is. I know Jennifer is. I know Dan is. But the bulk of the American people don't have a clue, and they're not standing up. You know, Dan, you made a statement that. It's something that's been in my mind a lot in the last few months, especially since Common Core came to the forefront of my attention, and especially since I've watched Common Core crumble. Common Core is literally crumbling in a lot of places, even in California. They're fighting hard, and I don't believe we've won the battle yet. But just a few months ago, nobody knew about Common Core. And now it's a very, very big issue in a lot of places. Thousand Oaks had a huge meeting. 70 parents lined up around the room waiting for hours to talk about it. But, Dan, you mentioned the 60s. And my mind is over the last few months has been keeps going back to the 60s. And I think, you know, boy, we went from the 60s to the 80s. And the 60s was a pretty bad time for our country in a lot of ways. There was we were in a lot of the same position. We had a lot of people who were a little bit nuts trying to get in control of some things. You know, we had ERA was running fast. But Phyllis Schlafly and some other people got together and demolished ERA. So that tells me we've been through this before. We've come back. And I think it's worse now than it's ever been, but I have faith that we can come back. I have faith that we can get back to years like we had in the 80s. But the problem is, again, we go back to like we had it in the 80s, and then, you know, we get lackadaisical again. And that's what we're suffering from now. We ended up in the 60s because – well, partly Dr. Spock, I believe, had a big deal to do with that and some pretty bad child-raising techniques. But we had a bunch of young people in our country that really didn't have a really good idea and understanding about how things really, really work. You know, we had a bunch of people that just felt that, you know, if you sang Give Peace a Chance long enough, that the whole world was going to lay down and there would never be any fighting again. You know, I'd love that. I'd love if we had it a world that, like the Beatles kind of described, you know, where there's no more fighting and no more sadness. But the world's never going to be like that. And, I just have to agree, Stacey. We're in a situation in our country right now where people are afraid. They just won't stand up. But we are the majority. We are the bulk. The bulk of this country still, in every statistic I have seen over the last 20 years, has remained consistent in these numbers within a few points. 60% of the country believes and feels and calls themselves conservative. 10 to 12% believe and call themselves far left. The rest are left to be either called kind of middle left, middle right. So I know for a fact that the way the American people feel on the issues, on the basics, on the foundations, on religion, on God, I know that our government is not going in the direction of the people. It's not because the votes aren't there. It's because the votes won't get up off the couch. You know, when 2/3 of the Christians don't even get out and vote, what are we going to do? I mentioned Neil Mammon, man. God bless him, running around the country trying to get the churches to get the idea that Jesus was involved in politics. He was involved in politics. Who do you think he was fighting? He was fighting the Jewish Sanhedrin. That was the politicians. King Herod, that was a politician. Just because at one point he said, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. That wasn't his point, wasn't to stay out of politics. Christians don't, we're not standing up. We're not teaching our young people. We're not educating. You know, Jennifer brought up, and I love it when she does, Frederick Douglass. Today, we watched, the kids and I watched, started watching a four-part series on the Civil War. In homeschooling, the first week we studied Frederick Douglass, and now we're looking at the Civil War, and we looked at some of the things that went on at that time. But there's the big basic that comes out of Frederick Douglass is one of jumping up. And ladies and gentlemen, that's the 90-second mark. Again, we're going to go over. If you're listening online, jump onto the phone real quick and call in, and you can listen that way. If you don't want to talk, just don't press 1, and we won't bring you on the air. If you do want to talk, you can do that, but call in at 347-205-9620, and you can continue listening as we go into the third hour. But the big thing that we learn from Frederick Douglass is about making lemons out of lemonade. Frederick Douglass's master's wife was trying to teach him how to read. She was using the Bible to do that, by the way. And when the master found out, he says, no, you got to stop, because an educated slave is a worthless slave. And instead of looking at the ground and being all sad and pouty, Frederick Douglass goes, aha! So you mean to tell me if I get some education, I can get out of this situation? And Frederick Douglass learned that education was the way to freedom. And that is an illustration for today. And this goes back to, Stacey, what you were saying about the cursive writing. We know why the left doesn't want to teach our young people to read cursive anymore, because all of our founding documents were written in cursive. And you are so right. If we've got a nation of people that don't know how to read cursive writing, they can't read those documents. Education is our way out of this. That's why I keep telling my candidates, you know, when I first started Blog Talk, I really, really tried to not try and give a candidate advice. I tried to interview them. I've gone in a different direction now. I try to share with them what I've learned. And here's what I've learned. If a candidate will get out and teach the basics, they will change the minds and hearts of the constituency. They've got to be responsible for educating the constituency. We cannot rely on Fox News, The Blaze, Breitbart, CNN. We cannot rely on the President of the United States or Congress or anybody else to teach the basics, to educate this great nation. It's got to be done on the local level. If it's not done on the local level, it's not going to happen. So instead of candidates running around arguing about rape and abortion, or arguing about assault rifles, or arguing on the fringe of all these things, they need to be on a concerted effort with their grassroots team, getting out to their constituents and educating them. Get into the homes. Get your team going. Get out and talk to people. It's not very, very difficult. I have had a lot of discussions over the years with people that had no clue about politics, and I can make them understand very clearly why I am a conservative within about 20 minutes worth of discussing. It doesn't take much. I mean, it doesn't take very much for a person to realize that a great big bureaucratic government has a whole lot more waste, fraud, and abuse than a smaller local government. And to give the people more control, then you need to give the more power to the smaller government than the big government, because the big government's always going to mess it up. That's simple. That is unarguable. That is undebatable. We get to all kinds of issues like that that we can explain. It doesn't take very long to explain to the people that, no, conservatives don't want to take away the safety net. The left wants to turn the safety net into a fishing net. And when you turn it into a fishing net, it breaks. We don't want to take, and I don't want to take away the safety net for people. I know there's people in this country that need help, and I think it's great that we can help them. But I want to take all the money that we're giving to the people that are just lazy and just living off the government. I want to take that away from them, and I want to give it to the people that really need help. I think the person that really, really needs help should live a better lifestyle. I want to give them more money. But they are a fraction of what we're passing money out to. And the Democratic side of the government, they don't want to do that. They just want to keep bringing more and more people into the system so that they can take care of them. And that's not the right answer to the problem. Doesn't take very much. You know, Rodney and I live in this great state of California, and there's a one basic fact that totally demolishes everybody on gun control. California's got the most stringent gun control there is in the country and the worst record on gun crime. That illustration right there should blow everybody out of the water. You know, his name left me. Thomas Sowell came out with an article today, and he gave a basic that totally demolishes climate change, but we got to get our candidates out and saying this. You know, one of the first things that they use to prove that climate change is destroying the world, it's Chicken Little, the sky is falling, is they talk about the Arctic ice cap and how it's shrinking. And they're right, it has been shrinking. Amazing. What they leave out is at the same time the Antarctic ice cap has been growing. And now if the scientists that are honest are starting to say, oh, it looks like the Arctic ice cap is starting to grow and the Antarctic ice cap is starting to shrink. And it's secular. It goes around and around and around. But I'll tell you, a scholastic worksheet came home one day for my oldest niece, Sedena, and it had a big picture of the polar ice cap 20 years ago and now. And sure enough, it's smaller. And I said, "Sit in," but they're leaving something out. And I got on the internet and I showed her where the Antarctic is doing just the opposite. And I said, "It's secular, it goes back and forth." She goes, "They're lying to me." And I said, "Yeah, they're lying to you. They're not giving you the whole truth." These are some basic things. It is not difficult to change hearts and minds on these issues. We're not going to change them. Like Rodney said, you know, you run into a bunch of dummies. You know, we used to have Jennifer Gallegos up in the great Northwest, and boy, there are really a bunch of wacko liberals up there. And we're not going to convince them. A lot of the leaders, they know this. Al Gore knows this. Al Gore knows that Antarctic ice shelf has been growing the whole time that the Arctic ice shelf has been shrinking. He knows that. He's a liar. He's a flat-out liar. Every single one of the issues that we stand up for goes along this line. Every single issue on the conservative side, we have truth behind us. We're not getting out and educating the people. And the conservatives themselves are lazy and not getting up and standing up and fighting. You know, to go back to the Bible again, go back to the second chapter of Acts. You know, Amway really brought the multi-level marketing to the forefront, but actually that was established on the day of Pentecost. Christ did that. The apostles did that. They all get together in Jerusalem. They preach the gospel to thousands of people that had met in Jerusalem for Pentecost. And those people from all parts of the world, from Greece, from Egypt, from Turkey, from the area we would know as Turkey now, from all over the world. And then they left, and they went back home, and they established churches all over the place. And what happened was the neighbors told neighbors, and Christianity in those first decades after the church was established on the day of Pentecost grew by leaps and bounds by that system. Well, you know, we sit around and we don't want to talk to our neighbors about politics because we're afraid, like you said, Stacy, of what's going to happen. We've been told for years, you know, two topics you don't ever discuss, religion and politics. I don't cuss, but there's a word that I'd really like to say right now. And that's our problem. That's our two big hurdles, and we're not jumping over those hurdles. We're sitting around, many of us are. We've got some caniacs that are still going to the train. Herman Cain got off that train 2 years ago, and the train never did stop. 999 was on for a while, but all the grassroots is still on, and it's still going. But we've got so many people in this country, and if we don't start educating them on these basics, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure some of this stuff out. I'm going to pass it back to Rodney and let him pass it on around the table.
Oh, I just think that, you know, when you're going around the country, and especially with me traveling out of California, and, you know, you mentioned with them not understanding the basics, there's more conservatives, but we talked about this last week, we always want to fight it on a chip on our shoulder basis, and we're never going to get anywhere, but, you know, sometimes they just, I've had conversations with people where I'm just kind of like dumbfounded on what they're saying and what they believe. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that dumbing down the country and these people, basically, they're living in a life where in the old days, if you had trouble and you went to your family, friends, or church for help, and then you had trouble again, you went to your family, friends, and church for help. Problem is, some people just don't want to hear, dude, it's your fault. You're the reason this is happening. And they don't want to hear that. So the government free ride is much easier because you get a check in the mail. You just ignore politics. You go on with your life because it doesn't matter to you, and nobody's telling you that you're the problem. And we've created an entire generation of that, unfortunately, that's why they can implement these rules in school and the bullying rules and things like that. You know, I was the class nerd, actually, on the radio now, but the shy guy in high school, and didn't like talking to people and get picked on by the jocks. And so I hung out in the quad by myself, but it made me want to be a better person. And when I got in the Navy, I kind of came out of my box, but that was because my father, I remember at 13 years old, telling me, you want a candy bar? Go earn it. Nothing's free. And I actually walked out of the grocery store, saw a lady sweeping the front of her store, and I said, I'll do that for a quarter, because I wanted a quarter for candy bar. But that's a whole different day and age, where nowadays it just, and even if they believe you, they don't want to hear it. And unfortunately, conservatives hide behind the, I don't want to play their game. I don't want to get involved. I don't want to argue with somebody. I don't discuss it in church. I don't talk to my friends and neighbors because you don't want to talk politics. It's like, okay, what would you like to happen? Because right now we're losing our rights, our country, our constitution. Everything we ever held dear is going by the wayside, and we're being given an entire tray full of don't try and succeed, don't try and be a better person, just float along, you know? So we've all got to come together and try and, you're right, educate and talk to people. If they hear it enough, they might start to believe it, because right now all they're hearing is the mainstream media, and they're hearing it again and again and again that all this awful rich Republicans, the terrible folks, and the Christian right, and these bullies in school. It's like, okay. Like, the bully thing just came around 5 years ago. It's never happened before. It's a new thing. It's like, really? So, and that goes right along with, you know, gun bans in America, because we all know that in New York, at 7 bullets in your clip, you're a freaking maniac that's going to go kill people. But at 6 bullets, you're totally cool and there's peace and harmony. And you hear that and it's like, really? So. And now pass it to Dan.
I agree with you completely. Just the way this country's moving, the arguments that the far left are using are just, I mean, if you sit down from a strictly logic perspective, it just makes no sense. You know, you look and say, you know, 7 bullets in a gun compared to 6 bullets, well, it only takes one to kill somebody. And no gun has the capability of killing anybody. The person behind the gun is the person that has the ability. And if we remove the right for an individual to carry a weapon, you know, to protect themselves, then we're just giving it to the person who is going to use that gun for the wrong reason. We're right now fighting, there's over here in Florida, we're going through the Trayvon Martin case. And this is a prime example of how our administration is trying to tear us apart. They're claiming Zimmerman killed this kid just because of race. But if you look at the evidence, everything is placed in front. You know why the police did not want to pursue it. You know why the DA did not want to pursue it. The Obama administration actually called the DA down here and coerced them into filing these charges. And it's on the local news here. That's why I'm bringing this topic up. And if we look at the evidence, you have a kid with a single bullet hole in his chest. He has scrapes on his knuckles. And that's it. You look at the defendant. His face was pummeled, broken nose, 2 black eyes, bruises all over his head. And they were trying to, on the news, change people's minds. So they show a picture of Martin when he's 12 years old, not the 17-year-old man he grew up into being, to help get people against Zimmerman. But you look at the evidence, it says just the opposite. I think everybody in our viewing audience has seen a fight at one time or another. The one who's winning is not the one who's screaming. The one who's screaming is the person who's losing. And you look at the evidence, it says it clearly. Which one had all the bruises? Which one was beat to a pulp? And which one had a single gunshot? And even if you talk about that, it was a close proximity shot, and you can tell that had that gun been drawn previously, there would have been a struggle. This is common logic, and this seems to be something that people don't do anymore. They believe what the news is, the media is telling them. They believe everything that, you know, is fed to them on this stupid square or rectangle that we view 16 hours a day. And they believe everything that's being told to them. The schools aren't teaching. The schools are teaching a history that is nothing but a fallacy. It's a facade. It's not the truth. And we're allowing this to happen. Our kids come home from school saying, oh, I learned this about, you know, our founding fathers. And what they're telling us is a line of baloney. And people don't get involved. They just sit down there and go, okay, and go on. Then it's politically incorrect to actually say something. When I first mentioned the evidence in the Zimmerman case, I had a person defriend me on Facebook just because of what I was saying. And I was saying something based on solid evidence, not on color. I don't care about color. I care about what's inside of you. Color is only skin deep. And that's what counts. It's a person with a good heart is a person who I want to associate with. And that's it. And that's why I have friends from all over the world. And if we looked at them, it would be a conglomerate of everything. And I call each and every one of them my friend. Dee, Kim are very close friends of mine. And I've been working with both of them for a long time. Everybody that I communicate with is I communicate with them as fellow patriots. And that's what counts. See, we're Americans. We're the melting pot. This is our whole foundation. And what this administration is trying to do is create problems. They're trying to create rifts. They want us to hate the big, bad corporate executives who are making, $20 million a year. But they fail to mention the subchapter S person who has a little plumbing company with two employees who, combined with his industry and his own salary, makes $250,000 a year. So they claim this guy's rich. Now they tax this guy, and then all of a sudden he can't hire that extra employee. He cannot grow his company so that he can help others out of poverty and into pursuing the American dream. And this is what this administration and what's been going on in Washington has been happening since the 60s. I grew up in a different world. The 60s, as you said, was filled with turmoil. We had, we lost JFK in 63 to an assassin. That was Oswald, who was pushing the communist end. Then we had Sirhan, killing RFK. And then we lost one of our greatest Republicans of all time, Martin Luther King, who, God bless his family, is still carrying, keeping on with the fight. And they're spreading the truth, but unfortunately the media wants to hide that. They push that aside. They don't say the Kings were Republicans. They try to make him look like a Democrat, which he never was. They failed to understand, LBJ's idea of signing the ERA amendment wasn't for equal rights. It was to take the black community and stick them into a central poverty where they had to rely on the government for just sustainability. And they got caught in this trap, and nobody's giving them an out. And that's broke apart, you know, added separation to the country. And, you know, this painting, as I said, of the big bad CEO making all this money, who comprises less than 1% of all the corporations in this country. And they make it look like this is every owner of every company. This helps the unions go. The unions are driven by, you know, lobbyists. They have more lobbyists than any other group in Washington. And then we have this administration claiming how terrible the big, bad, ugly corporations are, yet Biden's going over to Wall Street to ask for more money. So they contradict themselves. They can't rely on the truth. If you look at every post I put in, I have solid evidence. Everything I post comes from the National Archives, comes from the Library of Congress, some place where it's irrefutable. Yet, when I get into an argument, a debate with a liberal, they can't provide any of that. And they call me, you know, they try to discredit you and fight you rather than talk things out. And all this is doing is tearing our country, and this administration's doing a great job at doing it. They have created such a rift between the left and the right that it is going to be very difficult to mend that. I think it's possible, but it's going to have to start with education. It has to start with the fundamentals. As you said, Scott, we got to go back to the beginning to get this thing solved. Because unless we know where we came from, how can we proceed on into the future? Stacey, I'll pass it over to you.
Sorry about that. I was attempting to multitask. I wanted to touch quickly on something Scott said about educating people and how you can reach someone in about 20 minutes. You can explain conservatism very easily and sway someone very quickly. And what I get concerned about being wrapped up in the life of a young person, I guess, is the society that we have that's like a 30-second sound clip society where, you know, you go and watch a 30-second clip of a presidential debate and suddenly think that you've seen the whole debate, where you watch, like, the headlines of a news story and suddenly you know everything that's going on in the world. It's very hard to get the attention of people who are so stuck on themselves and so, you know, excited to share with the world what they had for lunch that day. It's hard to reach people this age, but I think that how we bring the parties together, Dan, is I've started to notice this with the people around me, and then also I really enjoy reading the comments on articles online, especially on, like, Politico and Mother Jones and stuff like that. I enjoy reading the liberals talk back and forth, and everybody is very against this NSA issue, and everybody is very against the immigration bill. And we've talked about this all night about how we're all connected as Americans. We all share the same core values, and that's how we come together. We get rid of these elites, remind them that they work for us, show them that we're not happy with the job that they're doing. And that's how we come, I think, how we come back together as Americans, is finding that one thing that we unite on and agreeing on that, and then friendly, like, debating all the things we don't agree on. Because if you can find that one core thing that makes you an American, like the Bill of Rights, then we can let the other stuff go, as long as we know at the end of the day okay, we have each other's back on the sovereignty of our nation. But I feel like 2% is running the entire country. This insanely progressive administration with coming out and just, you know, passing like edicts as if he's a king to say he's going to stop global warming, intentionally surpassing Congress, and then Congress sitting and doing nothing about it when the entire country is screaming it. It's time to stop, and it's going to crash and fall. My dad is a Democrat, and we always sit and have these kind of debates with each other about this is going to end. And we sit and talk about how it's going to end and what it's going to look like. And I hope and pray every day that it can end, you know, with a vote and the people standing up and talking. And he's more along the lines of, well, it's going to crash, and then we'll have to build it back up from the bottom. And I don't know how it's going to go, but, you know, as long as we fight all the way through, no matter which way it goes, as long as we're standing and we know the principles the country was founded on, and we're teaching our children, despite Common Core, about the Constitution, and we're passing down our family, you know, values and our morals and our Christian heritage and everything that we are, we don't lose in the end. No matter what our country looks like at the end of this mess, we come out on top. Scott?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, Stacey, I love reading the comments, too. And I love commenting in the comments and debating in the comments. I used to do that at the Huffington Post a lot, and then they started those autoplay videos on every single one, and you can't turn them off. But Rodney's got wanted to add to that, Stacey, so I'm going to throw it back to him real quick. Rodney, I'm going to tell you this also, add to what you said. When I was in the ninth grade, I was so terrified of public speaking. I was in the public speaking class, and they came in and told me that if you took debate, you only had to give three speeches, but if you were stayed in public speaking, you had to give 15. And I ran to debate real quick. I was so terrified of public speaking. And it wasn't a couple of years later I was standing in the pulpit. So it's an amazing how we can go. But I want to pass it back to Rodney, and then I'll take it back. He wants to make some additions to what you said, Stacey. Go ahead, Rodney.
Well, I just think, you know, she's talking about talking to people and stay with basics. We talked about this last week when I was joking that we had a young lady run for county supervisor up here in my own county, and she would walk into a meeting, and she's got a valid point, and she actually knows her stuff, but she's coming with like 900 pages of paper, and you've got 37 meetings this week you have to attend and talk to 500 of your friends and trying to bring it down to just basics, you know, Constitution, patriotism, our country. But on the flip side, unfortunately, the Republican Party has done a great job, and it's hard to teach somebody that you're right when from the moment you open your mouth, you're the enemy because you're one of them. And you talked earlier about there's more conservatives. The problem is now that word has become a bad thing, per se. And it's, you know, we talked about it last week, Rome is burning. At what point do we put the fire out? But my biggest issue, and I talked about this when I ran for vice chair, and you were helping me with it. If you got just real simple math, 10 people in a room, 4 of you just want to do the right thing, 6 people are doing the wrong thing, and the 4 of you quit. You can't fix it from the outside looking in, and it's this repetitive thing. I keep hearing the same thing over and over and over again. I'm not coming back to the Republican Party until you guys fix it. There's those of us like you and I still part of the Republican Party. We can't fix it if you keep quitting and walking away. With today's social media and technology, we're never going to get a third party. And so the bottom line is help us fix the Republican Party. We need people on central committees. We need people as delegates. You know, you were there when I ran and got 26% of the vote because they definitely don't want a guy in the second position in the party that has a mouth and tells the truth. So. But on Stacey's point, too, that teaching our own kids, it doesn't – if our parents of today could figure that out, it doesn't matter what that teacher is teaching my child. I'm teaching my child something different. And my child believes me, not the teacher. And that gets back to the old phrase, it takes a parent, not a village, to raise a child. And nowadays – the parents just act shocked. You know, it's they're teaching you what? Oh, and they don't do anything. You know, I'm last year, 2 years ago, my wife went down and just ripped the science teacher on some stuff. And actually, we yanked our kid out of school, sent him to private school for a year. And then now he's in high school, so he gets, he got good grades, he gets to go back. But, you know, we weren't putting up with it. How many parents will actually do that? Go down and, I mean, she lit him up. But it's parents staying involved. It's your child. Raise your children. Don't let someone else do it for you. So, back to you.
So true. So true. And that brings us back to Common Core, which a news article just came across, and I want to talk about it for a minute. But I wouldn't worry about Common Core for 5 seconds if I thought the American people were doing their job as parents. You know, the churches 100 years ago had some infighting all over the country about Sunday school. And you know, you think, why would they be fighting about Sunday school? Well, because there were some people that had a foresight into the fact that Sunday school might become a crutch, and then the parents would quit teaching in the home. And that's what's happened. If you go down to any church and you ask, almost all the parents will tell you, oh, no, I don't teach my kid Bible at home. Why? They learn it in Sunday school. And we had the same argument when public school really started to emerge its little head in this world. And I'm a firm believer in school. I loved school. I loved going to school. I believe public school's got a great place. But the American people have allowed to use it as a crutch so that they don't have to teach their students at home. You know, our president would like to make preschool a mandate. Well, you don't need to make preschool a mandate. The things that kids learn in preschool are very easily taught at home. Now, there's ERA, and that movement has really pushed our country into a two-person income in the home. It's hard for a mom to stay home and be a at-home mom. But the schools, public schools, being able to send our kids to school does not refrain the parents from being responsible for checking up on what they're learning and finding it out. I just mentioned, you know, my oldest niece brought home a scholastic worksheet that talked about the Arctic ice cap. I ask my nieces almost every day when they come home from school, what'd you learn? What are they teaching you? And I spend time with them talking about the things that I know they're going to teach them, and I'm fully ready to say, they are lying to you. I'm fully ready to tell them. They are also going to tell you that your mom and dad are wrong in what they teach you. And so it's in Sunday school and in public school, the illustration is the same. The problem is they become a crutch, and then the people get lackadaisical. And that's our problem, Rodney. I believe you hit it directly on the head. We've got so many parents out there that are just not even bothering. You know, why aren't our parents? Our parents should at least have our kids understanding ABC and 1, 2, 3 by the time they hit school. And they're not. The schools are being responsible for teaching that. How insane is that? How irresponsible is that as parents? You know, when you don't involve your students' in your children's lives at school and find out what's going on, that's where this comes from. Boy, I'll say it again. If I believed every parent was doing their job of raising their children right and having responsibility in what they're learning, Common Core wouldn't scare me so much. But it does scare me because I know that they're trying to take over the minds and the hearts. This just in, and I tagged all of you guys on this article when I shared it on Facebook. Arnie Duncan tells newspaper editors how to report on Common Core. Now get this. This is hilarious. Here's what he's saying. He says, do the reporting. He says, ask the Common Core critics, please identify a single lesson plan that the federal government created or requires of any school or district. Well, number one, the federal government itself isn't going to be making the curriculum. We know that. The curriculum is coming from higher above the federal government. They want to make this a UN thing, really, when it all comes down to it. And we've got a small handful of people making it. And they're right. There has not been any real Common Core curriculum put out yet. They're very smart in that, aren't they? But they've got this little problem called the stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Texas. And in Texas, they've got C-Scope, which is the equivalent of Common Core that was passed down there because they knew Texas wasn't going to fall for Common Core, and they did make a curriculum. So we know what the Common Core curriculum is going to look like through Texas. We know exactly what it's going to look like. We know exactly where it comes from, and it's really, really scary. So Arnie Duncan, there's your answer to that one. He also says, ask if they can identify any textbook that the federal government created, endorsed, or required for any school, teacher, or district in the state. Well, of course not. But, boy, you can go to the Scholastic books. You can go to those selection right there, and you can see all the Common Core stuff and what the subjects are. And we can find out all kinds of other places what direction they're heading in. Now, Common Core has been pretty smart by not putting out the curriculum first. That was pretty smart on their part because they knew if they put the curriculum out first that they want to roll out, then there was going to be a problem. There's another aspect to this. They're wiping out all the paper stuff in all the schools as a part of Common Core. Why? So that they can control it all in the computer. In the state of Texas, the parents weren't even allowed to see what the curriculum was. Arnie Duncan goes on to ask to identify any element, phrase, or single word of the Common Core standards that was developed or required by the federal government. Well, same there. And then if they tell you any of these things are happening, challenge them to name names. Challenge them to produce evidence. Well, we just did. And also, Arnie Duncan also goes on to say that there was no data gathering. Well, that's not. They're already gathering data. Obamacare does that. The IRS does that. NSA does that. We already know what that side wants to do with data gathering. But we can also already, I can give you an illustration right here and right now. I'm a full-time uncle. For those of the people that don't know that are listening, I stay at home. I'm a stay-at-home uncle. I do what income work I do from home, and I stay at home and I raise these kids, and my sister works and her husband works. And so every time we go to the pediatrician hands me a little slip to take back to the school. Now, the school doesn't need permission for me to pull those kids out of school for a doctor's appointment, or if I just want to take them to Disneyland for the day. We've got the right to take those children out, and the doctor doesn't have to write a little slip letting the school know they were at the doctor's office. That's data mining. We already have a big, huge list, and we've already got schools all over the country that are already data mining. They're asking kids all kinds of things about what's going on in the home, whether they've got guns. We got data mining going on at the pediatrician's office. The pediatricians all over the country are being asked to ask, are there guns in your home? So Arnie Duncan, and I'm loving this article. I'm really loving this article because Arnie Duncan, in essence, brought Common Core out to a lot of news media that probably didn't even really, really know what was going on. And he had to lie again in order to accomplish the task. And that's where we sit, folks. That's exactly where we sit. And as long as they continue to really start getting defensive like that, we know we're winning. A peacock only shows his plumage when he's afraid. A peacock only shows his plumage when he's afraid. They tried to keep Common Core quiet. I've said it many times on this show. The one thing that makes me angry about Mitt Romney, and if I ever ran into him and if I ever had a chance to talk to him, the one thing I would say was you were a fool for not bringing up Common Core during the election. He knew about it, he understood it, and he didn't. And he could have brought it up in that debate, and he could have laid it out on the line, and I'm afraid he would have turned that election over on its edge. Didn't use it. He's a moron. Moron. He had the biggest weapon in his arsenal right there. And he didn't use it. Of course, there was a bunch of other ones that he didn't use either, which really made me kind of angry. But Common Core, we've watched it. It was just a few months ago. I need to really look back and see exactly what the date was. But where We had Orlene Coley on the show. I'd listened to Phyllis Schlafly interview Orlene Coley on Common Core on her radio show. And I went, you've got to be kidding me. And so I got on the email, and I got Orlene to come on Conservatives Coast to Coast, the show we did on the Underground Hard Drive, and we interviewed her for an hour and a half. And she explained what Common Core was, and she says, Scott, she says, right now only 5% of the country knows what Common Core is. Since then, state by state, it's falling. The left is mad. The right is mad. This article, in fact, Arne Duncan says that. He says we're getting fights from the left and from the right. It's going to fall. It's going to fall. I'm a firm believer that if our candidates will use Common Core, they're going to win their battles. It looks like Gomez lost his battle. Why was Gomez discussing any issues other than big government overreach? Common Core, getting out and explaining to his constituents. He played the game that everybody's been playing, politicians been playing for years. Instead of doing what Rodney did, I loved being a part of that, Rodney. I apologize for not being able to be more involved than I was. You caught me at a time when life was really busy, but I did everything I could, but I really, really loved watching you run that race. Because it was about educating the people. It was about educating them. And these candidates that are running around discussing the fringe issues are not going to win. And the candidates that get out and do a belly gut into the left, fight the left. Don't fight the candidate. He should have been painting Markey with the great big broad brush of government overreach. The left has been doing it to us for decades, and it works. Saul Alinsky said that's what you do, and that's what they've been doing it. They paint us with the big broad brush of being racist. And it works. Every single candidate out there needs to be painting with the giant brush of government overreach, spying. Because there's a lot of people in this country that have no idea what's been going on in this country over the last 6 weeks. They have no clue about NSA. They have no clue about the IRS. They have no clue about Homeland Security. You know, you start watching newspaper reports on situations, local law enforcement situations, and there's that little car that says the Department of Health and Human Resources. I mean, I'm sorry. Not the Department of Health and Human Resources. The Department of Homeland Security. What are they doing? You know, when we're down in Bakersfield, a man that was obviously in a bad situation in front of a hospital was killed by a bunch of cops, and then they turned around and stole the cell phone because there was recordings on it. And right there in the picture, there's that big old white van, DHS. What are they doing there? They don't have any business there. Boy, I'm telling you, Rodney, and you're up there. I believe you're in D'Agostino's district up there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Where, man, talk about a I will support that man whenever he's ready up for re-election. He's going to have some cane support, I'm telling you. Because he stood up and said the federal government is making fools of themselves in our national forest, so they are no longer going to be deputized. They are no longer going to be able to enforce state and local laws because they're making fools of themselves. Booted the federal government out. I'm going to pass it back to you, Rodney. I'll let you pass it back to Dan and Stacey, and then we'll come around and we'll probably be getting close to closing remarks.
Well, that's what I mean. Living up here in Eldorado County is like a whole different world. We got McClintock from my congressman. And you got Sheriff D'Agostini, and it was a brutal, bitter battle to get him elected. But he balanced the budget his first year, gave $6 million back his second year. I think we've had somewhere around a 600% increase in concealed weapons permits, and crime is down to a ridiculous low. And then he was the first sheriff in the country to write the letter to Joe Biden saying he will not implement violations of Second Amendment laws in this county. And then now you've got the Agenda 21 and the federal Forest Service people coming in. They actually tried to arrest a woman. She was dredging on her own property that backs up to her section of the river, and they tried to arrest her because she didn't have a permit. Now, of course, what they did is they went ahead and abolished the department you get your permit from. You can't go apply for a permit because there is no division anymore. But then they'll fine you for not having a permit. And so she went ahead and dredged her own property. But, yeah, he took their guns away, took away their deputy badges, and kicked them out, told them no way. And that's why I keep telling people, I don't care if your thing is immigration or if it is Constitution or if it's Agenda 21, Common Core, whatever it is, it starts local. We have a conservative, good city council, county supervisors, and the greatest sheriff, in my opinion, in the country, and that stuff will not happen here. So we got locals elected. You know, that was last year working in all these politics in five western states, and my greatest campaign was Tricia Wilkins for Placerville City Council, and she is standing her ground, and it is amazing. So it's just everyone's got to come together, get back to local politics, get back involved. It blew my mind. I was at the fair, and somebody had posted on Facebook. It was a joke that was the new Facebook settings where you can go public, your friends in the NSA, just you in the NSA or just the NSA. And this woman looks at me. She goes, I don't get it. I went to the NSA, National Security Administration, spying on people. Well, what's that? And I'm like, oh, my word, are you kidding me? Well, I don't really watch news. Okay, good night. I was like, you've never heard of the NSA situation. And she had no clue. And I'm like, oh, my word, that's front page everything, and you have no idea. And I'm just like, night-night, people. So we got to move forward, and that's why your radio show is so awesome, because we hit the real topics and we keep talking about it. So hopefully someone's listening.
And Rodney, if you got any connections with the good sheriff, I'd love to have him as a guest on the show, I'll tell you, because rocked. Our sheriffs are going to be the ones that come down to saving this country if that's at the point where it has to be. The sheriffs are the ones taking the forged birth certificate, and I don't know where Obama was born. I don't really care. All I know is that the birth certificate that they provided has been proven by law enforcement, big law enforcement, to be a major forgery. And that's enough to pull them out. And the sheriffs are behind that. The sheriffs are going to take it to Washington, D.C. So if you can get him on the show for us, Rodney, I would love that. We're running out at about 14 more minutes?
Scott,
pass it to Bud, and then we'll pass it to Stacey, and we'll we'll close out.
I couldn't agree more. Right now, what's going on in this country is just, it's beyond belief. I'm so frustrated. I started this whole campaign. I never was a political activist. I, for years, was just a regular Republican. I went out, did my research before the elections, voted for who I wanted, and went home and basically put things aside and didn't worry about it, especially during the 80s. You know, we were flying high and everything was great. I first became aware of politics during the Clinton administration when I saw some things from an economic perspective. The Fair Housing Acts that were passed, and I'm looking going, this is going to be a nightmare. And back in the 90s, I'm sitting there going, we're destined for doom. Saw this keep on evolving, you know, during the Bush years. Bush tried on several occasions to warn the public, but people don't understand economics because they aren't taught in the schools. And so people didn't listen. People listened to Barney Frank and his saying, calling Bush a worrywart and things, and how, you know, the economy was doing great. While we're watching all the subprime loans going through our economy, and it's a big bubble. It's the false economy. And it was just a question of time before it blew up. Then, you know, of course, it blew up at the end of the Bush administration, and it was blamed right on, of course, Bush, and people believe what they're hearing when the facts say it didn't happen that way. We're having a country today where people are not thinking, people are not getting involved on the national level. And then I'm saying we need to reestablish the state sovereignty. We need to bring it down to a state level where the state is autonomous, and the state is the one where it all begins, and it starts on the local level. I couldn't agree with you more, Rodney. It's if we don't start at the state, at the county level, state level, then there's no chance that the representatives that we're sending to Washington are going to properly represent our beliefs and our thoughts as a state. So what happens is naturally we're shifting power to the federal government, which is the exact wrong thing to do. We need to keep that separation of power. Ultimate power breeds ultimate corruption, where the way our founding fathers designed this country was that separation of power, so no one entity could gain so much control that it could override the rest. And this is what's happening now. We have no way of defending ourselves. We have no way of stopping a federal invasion. Department of Homeland Security is everywhere. It's turning into, it reminds me, sadly to say, of Hitler's SS in World War II, because it's a entity that is being controlled strictly from Washington. It is not part of any type of federal law enforcement. It kind of works on its own. It has free rein to do as it pleases. And that's really, really scary. In one of my last blogs when I was talking about, last post when I was talking about Border Patrol, I said disband Department of Homeland Security, pass them over to the Border Patrol, build a three-tier fence from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to the Pacific Ocean. Guard it with, we're already paying these people, send them along the lines, close down the borders as tight as you can, deal with, go after the illegal immigrants, get them out, and the ones who have been here a long time and who are contributing members of our society, we give them the opportunity to go through the proper immigration channels. We also need to revamp the immigration process. You know, right now it's a waiting line that takes years and years and years, and it's totally antiquated. It hasn't been changed in something like 40 years, yet we're still going with it. There are so many issues right now that we need to deal with as a nation, and sitting there turning your back on it, pretending it doesn't exist, or not having the education to be able to combat what's happening, how are we going to stop this? So it is up to the politicians to educate, because schools aren't doing it. We need to start somewhere. We need to wake people up. And rather than arguing abortion or gay marriage or something like that, say, look what's going on, people. Look at what's your amendments. Look at your Bill of Rights. They're being torn apart. That's why I've chosen, rather than calling myself a conservative or anything else, I call myself a constitutionalist. And I call myself that for one reason. The one reason, one thing that we all have in common that both the left and the right do agree on for the most part is the Constitution of the United States. And I am registered Republican, but the whole idea is if you go out and say I'm a conservative, you go out and say, what you stand for, I'm a Republican, automatically the wall comes up, the left doesn't listen. You can tell them every single thing you want. You can back it. I mean, God could come out and be your witness, and it wouldn't be enough to get through to them. if you present yourself as a person who believes in the Constitution and say, this is what we're after. We're after a return. We want what we had before. We want the middle class to succeed. We want everybody to have a piece of that American dream. This is the core of our country. This is what we are founded on. We were founded on that anybody can become anything they wish, and the only person that prevents them from doing it is themselves. If you are motivated, you can become president, you can own a multi-billion-dollar corporation, or you can dig ditches, whatever you want to do. This is the beauty behind it. If you ever spent anybody, and ever spent any time in Europe, there's so much class distinction that you are not allowed to even participate with the other class. I did a student exchange program, and I was my exchange student that came across from Spain. His father was an ambassador. Why? Because my father was a doctor. And it was class distinction, even on that level. And with Europe has proven that this ideal doesn't work. This experiment that we've been involved with for the last 250 years does work. We've shown it and we've proven it. But every time we finally get to a peak where we're all doing well, we get lazy and we fall right back into the same quandary. We had a high coming out of World War II. Once we got the servicemen back into jobs in the 50s and right through the mid-60s, everything was going great. Then we got lazy. Everything fell apart. It was 70s were rocky. We come back up during the Reagan years. Once again, brings us back to our basics, and we prosper, and it goes right. And it's just been a roller coaster that we've been on, and we need to stop this. And the only way we can stop it is through educating the public. How can we do that? Through our politicians, through these people saying and telling the people, no, we aren't, this issue, yes, needs to be dealt with, but that's not our primary problem right now. We're trying to save the nation. Let's worry about what we need to worry about first. It's called prioritizing. And the first priority is save this nation. Save the Constitution. Save our Bill of Rights. Because if we lose that, we lose everything. Stacey, on over to you.
You brought up Hitler's SS, and it brought back to me a thought I had earlier today. I heard a news story about how schools, I believe it was in California, had been given funds to teach the students about Obamacare, to go home and educate their parents on the exchanges and how it works and how great it is. And I was just stunned by how Hitler's youth that is. And it's just incredibly creepy. And it goes into what's wrong with education and how it turns what they're doing with Common Core and with things like that. They're turning our students, our children, our babies into little propaganda machines, into little robots of the government. And it terrifies me. And I think that we are at a break it or make it point. It's either going to go horribly wrong from here, or we're about to have like an education revival where parents, and I, Scott, you know this, I believe that this upcoming school year is going to break through to parents. When people stop getting report cards, I think it's when it's going to crack. And I'm really excited about that. But until parents start really, 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 really getting it, we come off as conspiracy theorists because these people who are so uninformed, like Rodney, the person you were talking about, not knowing about the NSA thing, it's just, it baffles me too. And I was sitting with a parent that I met randomly. Her children go to school with my children. We had dinner a couple weeks ago.